Well, what yeah. city are you in?
Oh, it's Austin.
Oh,
it's
you're
a different place, and it's higher up and concrete and all this other crap.
So was it a conscious choice?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I left for a little bit because I needed to bunker down and use all my money for Ghost Gunner, but now I'm back because Ghost Gunner is like, you know.
Okay, so what happened with Ghost Gunner?
No, what I mean is, like, so I was in Austin, then I left in the beginning of the summer because I was out of money, but then we started Ghost Gunner, and I'm not out of money anymore.
Right. So it's going stupid, right? I mean, good. It's got, I mean, are you still selling units?
It's not like I'm living in a luxury apartment or anything, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we did enough. We did what we needed to do.
Very cool. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. I'm glad we got 2 hours. I don't feel so pressured, and we'll get right to it. Let me do a quickie of who's coming on, and then here we go.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us, but if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here. Let us make them remember. We are not afraid.
Yeah, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear. I tell you, we have a lot of no fear this week and last week and next week and so on. This is what we're going to do. We're going to get right to Cody Wilson here in just a little bit, 2 hours, because I know there's a lot of good stuff we need to talk about with him. Yesterday we had on Don Lundgren, a kid that joined the Syrian army rebels or Syrian rebel army or whatever. McCain was saying that, oh yeah, these are good guys getting money. Go, woo, and he wanted to go be a merc and he went, and now he can't work. They said, no, you're a security threat. No, man, it's all lies, stacked on top of lies. Then we had Joel Skousen for 2 hours plus going over, you know, the end of the world as we know it and what should be done. And one thing I learned last night, we had our economic discussion group, and they had a presentation on Bretton Woods, you know, just the history of it, who did it, why, and kind of. Everything that I'm learning, everything that they're saying, more and more I become aware of why blockchain technology and Bitcoin is such a threat to the establishment. Every definition that they were given of money, so many things. We'll talk about that in a second, but I want to tell you, in the third hour, we had David Wright, the gentleman I met, young guy that created a windmill solar powered little mobile station of my power out of a golf cart. It was really cool. I saw him going, wow, that's what a good idea. It's like, you know, mobile batteries with a unit and everything. It's your power unit on a golf cart. I thought, you know, how you think somebody would have thought of that already. Then Bill Buepert. Tomorrow is going to be in the studio all 3 hours. Now, here was a real merc that was in Afghanistan until in the last year, about a year ago. He was up to a year ago. He was in Afghanistan. He's been a good friend. And he and his wife, Lila, are going to stay the weekend. And I knew she wanted to go dance. I just knew it. Don just told me, yeah, we're going out Friday night. I got to go dance. Yeah, that's what I figured, man. Because we're at Buzz's Big Gay Dance Party at Pork Fest, man. She wanted to dance. She goes, I want to talk no more politics. We're going to dance. So anyway, so we're going to have a good time this weekend. Get to know what's up with Bill Buepert. ZeroGov.com. ZeroGov. Yep. Well, that tells everything you need to know. Then next Tuesday, Michael Elliott, Seasteading, polymer guy. Now, that's what we put down here. He's come up with a concrete that's a polymerized rock It was invented by the Russians and kind of he rediscovered. And what's useful for it is concrete that doesn't degrade in seawater. And so I'm just like, you know, it's always about materials. So we're going to have that fun. Jerry Day is a videographer that I know you're going to recognize his voice and you see his stuff on Freedom's Phoenix. We've always got a lot of his YouTubes that he's done and everything. And he lives high in the mountains up in California. He wants four domes. He goes, I need four. I said, you know what? Get your butt on the show, and we'll just talk about what you're doing. What are you going to do with four domes? So we're going to be talking with him and all his videos and such. Then Terry Floyd from Bitcoin Express next Friday. And I had Monday or Tuesday, I had on Paul Pway from Airbits. This is the Ernie Just Button app so far, to the point that it's the first time that I ever recommended a wallet. And I had Donna, my wife, all right, here we go. Here's your first wallet. Boom, charge it up a little bit, done. And I got some Bitcoin this weekend at Libertopia from an ATM machine that it was so freaking easy. Cash went in, Bitcoin went on my phone, nobody knew nothing. And I'm going, that was so freaking easy that it's got to be illegal, man. There's going to be something going on. Well, what am I hearing? I'm hearing that Cody Wilson, you know, is to keep the Bitcoin free, is, you know, he's going, you know what? I'm going to have to run for the board foundation or president or something and shut it down. And I bet they don't like that none too much. So I'm starting to see that all the definitions of money they gave about in the Bretton Woods presentation, it goes like this. National currencies represent what is the trade according to the king, you know, or the government or whatever, which might as well just be the rancher of the livestock, which is its citizenry. People that live within that geographic area, they're ours, and you're not allowed. Nope. Legal tender laws say, and it's not gold, and so they might be doing that on the side, but officially, and what they pay taxes in, is in this currency that we control, and it's ours, and thank you. Well, then they created this kind of pool of exchange of, you know, when ranchers do their own exchange at a government level or when the peons are allowed to and so on. And you got the IMF and the World Bank and, you know, Bank of International Settlements and on and on and on, all this control. And everything they were talking about, Joe Cobb happened to be one of the finance guys that helped with Ron Paul when he was in Congress. He worked with him. And what they did is when they made to where you could actually start, you know, minting, you know, silver and gold again. That was a Ron Paul thing. And this was in the late, you know, it was in the 70s or something, because after the gold window got closed in 71 by Nixon, because the deal was in Bretton Woods is that, you know, each dollar is worth 1/35th of an ounce. You know, it was $35 an ounce it was pegged at, kind of. And they said, you know what, you just keep printing a bunch of dollars. We got them, and then here they are. We want gold for it. Well, after a point, it got to where, you know, we don't have any more gold, and we're done. All right. Then kind of the petrodollar thing happened and so on. But bottom line was this. There was such a rush on all this money that we just printed. And then they came in and said, we want our gold for it. Every definition that they gave for what money is and so on, all of a sudden, all of that control, all of that, you know, fiat, trust us, we rule you, and don't worry about the printing press. All of that is bypassed with Bitcoin. Done. Every definition they gave, I'm going, wow, and wow, and the inflation thing, wow, and the security thing, wow, and the peer-to-peer and distributed and everywhere and costing no governments kind of wows people's money. I see the importance. I also see why they want to come get some. Now, I'm going to go ahead and we'll get right to Cody in the next segment, but I want to read his bio here. Now, you guys are going to be, and we'll show his pretty pictures up there. Cody Rutledge Wilson, born January 31, 1988, is an American crypto anarchist, free market anarchist, and gun rights activist. Best known as founder director of Defense Distributed, a nonprofit organization that develops and publishes open source gun designs, so-called wiki weapons, suitable for 3D printing. Defense Distributed gained international notoriety in 2013 when it published plans online for the Liberator, a functioning pistol that could be reproduced with a 3D printer. USA Carry named Wilson one of America's 30 influential pro-gun rights advocates. Only 30? Like top 10, man. And Wired Magazine's Danger Room has named him one of the 15 most dangerous people in the world. Yeah, you're moving up. There you go. Coat Wilson is co-founder of the Dark Wallet Bitcoin storage technology. We're going to be talking about that. Early life and education, originally from Little Rock, Arkansas. Wilson was student body president at Cabot High School in Cabot, Arkansas. He graduated in 06. Wilson graduated from the University of Central Arkansas with a bachelor's degree in English in 2010, where he had a scholarship. While at UCA, Wilson was a member of Sigma Phi Epsilon fraternity. God, man, I was too. ASU. Okay, we'll talk about that. And was elected president of UCA's Student Government Association. He also traveled to China with UCA's study abroad program. He is a former student at the University of Texas School of Law. And then we'll get into defense distributed, and it goes on and on and on. We'll get proper introductions. That's why we got 2 hours with Cody Wilson. We're going to find out how the planet's going to, you know, change. And you get the witness. We'll be right back.
Did you agree? Did you totally agree? I'll bet that you did. But did you read the agreement? There are 7 billion people on Earth, and there are over 6 billion active cell phone accounts right now. And every one of them came with an agreement. Billions have already agreed to allow entities that they do not know to use and abuse every feature of their mobile devices. Your computer activity is monitored and archived. Your car is tracked, and even your face is scanned. The current power structure grows more fearful every day of your desire for anonymity, independence, free association, freedom of movement, freedom of expression, and your freedom of thought. And entire categories of humans will be targeted. And if they, then those that won't leave us alone, determine that we are not within their control, then we will be categorized as out of control. FreedomsPhoenix.com will launch the next phase of the Levolution by the end of the summer of 2014. And if you have to tell your neighbors about it, then we did it wrong.
Cody?
Yeah?
I want to go ahead and finish reading your bio here. That'll probably take me. I'll go right to it when we get back, and then we'll go to you, okay?
Okay. I don't know. I guess you're reading that from Wikipedia, though.
Yeah, so it was. A lot of it's BS, so I thought it came from you.
No, it didn't come from me.
All right, so we don't care. All right. The Cody Wilson's War, Dark Wallet co-founder plans to infiltrate, destroy Bitcoin Foundation. Where'd that come from? CoinDesk or something. Okay, let's see. While Americans are going to the polls Tuesday, Upstart Business Journal Michael DeCastillo reported that Cody Wilson, defense distributor in Dark Wallet, was announcing his own candidacy for the Bitcoin Foundation board, and his motives for running were quite clear. Wilson told DeCastillo, "I will run on a platform of the complete dissolution of the Bitcoin Foundation will begin," and every blah, 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 blah. You know, that's cool, but I wanted to certainly get defense distributed and Ghost Gunner and that kind of stuff in there, too.
Yeah,
let me see. Let's see. I'm sorry?
So let's do it.
All right. Let's see. On American gun politics, popular science, blah, blah, blah. Talks about that. On subversion and resistance, as a Glenn Beck quote from you. And then Dark Wallet. And Bitcoin Foundation. It gets into that. It's pretty good.
Sounds good, man. I'm looking for this story. For some reason, I'm having trouble finding it. The story about the foundation and central U.S. Central Command. It's
really?
Like they wiped on the internet. Yeah,
of course they did. Well, you can talk about it anyway.
Okay, I can still talk about it, but I'd love to have like a direct quote.
You know, I'm the purging of the net has begun. Mox News, 65,000 videos taken off the internet, off the YouTube. You know, I talked to Sean Wilkinson from Storage and David Irvine, all those guys and everything, and they're getting close to be able to launch it, maybe even by the end of the year. And when that happens, one of the first things we're going to do is I got Derek on Freedom's Phoenix is setting up the player that Storage use, and it's an HTML5, you know, blah, blah, blah. So we can start becoming our own YouTube, Yeah, I'll tell you about it. It's going to be cool.
You know, we lost one of my favorite videos is on Mox News, and it's gone now.
Yeah, here we go.
0309.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Man, if that phrase doesn't apply to, you know, the attitude of Mr. Cody Wilson. I mean, you know, I'm not, you know, who'll build the roads? I mean, you know, there was a presentation at Libertopia by Walter Block. They did it via Skype, and it was all on who will build the roads in a libertopia, you know. And I didn't get to see it. I was busy doing something else, but everybody said it was awesome. He answered the question. All right, so let's go ahead and get. I want to read into the record. You know, get this bio from Cody Wilson, because this is Donna pulled this stuff together from, you know, Wiki and wherever she got it. And I thought she did a pretty good job here. In 2012, Wilson Associates of Defense Distributed initiated the Wiki Weapon Project to raise funds for designing and releasing the files for a 3D printable gun. Wilson is to date the only spokesperson on behalf of the organization, of which he describes himself as co-founder and director. Learning of his organization's plans, manufacturer Stratasys threatened legal action and demanded the return of a 3D printer, at least to Wilson. On September 26, 12, before the printer was assembled for use, Wilson received an email from Stratasys suggesting he was using the printer for illegal purposes. Stratasys immediately canceled its lease with Wilson and sent a team to confiscate the printer the next day. While visiting the ATF enforcement office in Austin to inquire about legalities related to his project, Wilson was subsequently interrogated by the officers there. 6 months later, he was issued a federal firearms license to manufacture and deal. In May 13, Wilson successfully test-fired a pistol called the Liberator, reportedly made by a Stratasys Dimension Series 3D printer bought on eBay. After test-firing, Wilson released a blueprints of the gun's design online through Defense Distributed. Political and economic views. Wilson claims an array of influences from anti-state and libertarian political thinkers, including leftist market anarchists like the mutualist scholar Pierre-Joseph Proudhon, which I don't know, capitalist libertarians such as the Austrian school scholar Hans Hermann Hoppe, and classical liberals including Frederick Bastiat. Wilson is against intellectual property rights, which is a common view of radical libertarians, but generally seen as a foundational within the mainstream libertarian movement. He also has indicated that although his primary goal in the is the subversion of state structures, he also hopes that his contributions may help to dismantle the existing system of capitalist property relations. On American gun politics, asked during an interview with Popular Science if the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting had affected his thinking or plans anyway, Wilson responded, "Understanding that rights and civil liberties are something that we protect is also understanding that they have consequences that are also protected or tolerated. The exercise of civil liberties is antithetical to the idea of a completely totalizing state." That's just the way it is. Yep. And then on subversion and resistance, during a January 13 interview with Glenn Beck on the nature and motivations behind his effort to develop and share gun 3D printable files, Wilson offered, "That's a real political act. Giving you a magazine, telling you that it will never be taken away. That's real politics. That's radical equality. That's what I believe in. I'm just resisting. What am I resisting? I don't know. The collectivization of manufacture? The institutionalization of the human psyche? I'm not sure, but I can tell you one thing. This is a symbol of reversibility. They can never eradicate the gun from the earth." Yeah. Journalist Brian Doherty from Reason described Wilson as more than just a gun guy, adding that Wilson may be right about how it has to end. The people will have the power. Now we get into the Bitcoin stuff. Man, see, well, you know, Cody's busy, man. Dark Wallet. In 2013, Wilson, along with Amir Taki, began work on a Bitcoin wallet called Dark Wallet, a project by which he plans to help anonymize financial transactions. He appeared in support of the Dark Wallet project at the SXSW Festival in Austin, Texas in 2014, speaking to publications such as Reason TV. The Bitcoin Foundation. Now, this is what I want to talk about today. On U.S. Election Day, 4 November 2014, Wilson announced in an interview that he would stand for election to a seat on the board of directors of the Bitcoin Foundation with the sole purpose of destroying the foundation. And Wilson stated, "I will run on a platform of the complete dissolution of the Bitcoin Foundation and will begin and end every single one of my public statements with that message." Why? Now, I didn't even go into his ghost gunner here, where now he has a desktop mill that you get a 80% finished billet of AR-15, you know, forging a block of aluminum, you put it in, and boom, and it does. We had him on last time, and that was, just talk about that real quick, Cody. How's your ghost gunner doing? Sales okay?
Yeah, Ernie, hey, we launched that thing on your show, and by the way, thanks for having me again. And yeah, I can't complain. So, you know, we sold out much faster than I thought we would. We've got a wait list going. We built out a new warehouse, brought some slave labor in, and we should be shipping by the end of the year.
Yeah, slave labor. What does that mean, friends?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I found a bunch of unwitting agorists in Austin, you know, just itching to be paid. So no, that's just me being, you know, contemptuous. We've got a bunch of people, and I've got a lot of people I trust, people doing software and people that are helping us assemble the boxes, and all the difficult administrative stuff has been put through, and basically we've got it's all just sitting in my warehouse right now. We're going to start building like next week.
Oh, so that means I'll get mine before Christmas?
Yeah, exactly. You really should be able to. The first 200 should be all in the mail by then. There's a couple of things. I still don't have the correct shipping containers and some other stuff, which we've had to scramble to kind of get on time. But all these things are small and should be able to get taken care of.
All right, very cool. Well, just real quick, I remember when we launched a Ghost Gunner, man. That was big excitement. It was right when Jerry Brown, governor of California, was going to be signing some legislation to kind of make what you were doing illegal in California, and he vetoed it. I guess he got the memo. It doesn't matter. Cody Wilson's just going to make fun of you. So he's like, maybe not. So this is a big deal. Explain real quick what it is.
The Ghost Gunner?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. The Ghost Gunner, I'm not really that good at explaining it, but It's a tabletop CNC mill, so it's a desktop milling machine. And people are like, so what? Like, when I get these insurance brokers on the phone, they're like, what does that do? What does that mean? Okay, for us, we created a machine around the idea of finishing 80% lower receivers for AR-15s with a standard for the operation of this machine. So its hardware and software are, you know, good enough to do this, and whereas most milling machines can't do this for you. So we're not talking about printing a low receiver. We're talking about milling one from an 80% aluminum block and turning it into a fully functional receiver for you. And then, of course, like incorporating software for 1911 frames, 308, and 10 receivers.
You know,
basically
this is
making sure that this can be done over and over again.
You know, the what was so interesting with your video that you did this is that they came out threatening, see, somebody could do this. And you go, yeah, somebody could, you know, and you did. And you used their statements while you were showing that you made it. I can't imagine that they took a lot of humor out of that. You know, they had something to say, and we're going to find out what it was when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with, I mean, Cody Wilson, if he doesn't exemplify that, or I don't know who does, man. he just do it. There, I just declared my independence. No government for. We'll be right back. Aren't you tired of governments murdering people around the world? Well, stop using their money. There's an alternative. Bitcoin is a stateless, free market, non-political currency. Bitcoin cannot be inflated or controlled by any government, and by using their money, you're helping the state. Stop doing it. You have an incredible alternative available now. Learn it. Use it. Spread it. Get started with Bitcoin at weusecoins.com. That's weusecoins.com. Yeah, I did that for Ian. Weusecoins.com. Is that their thing? Is that a particular thing? You know what that is?
Who, me?
Yeah.
About We Use Coin?
Yeah.
I've seen it like 2 years ago, I think, but I've never really used it.
Well, I mean, is it a wallet? I don't even know what it is. I forgot. They asked me to do that.
No, Bitcoin education and sites. Like, I don't remember anything else about it.
Yeah, I know the guys that asked me to do it. They're good guys, so I don't care. The Airbits, what do you know about Paul Pway's Airbits thing?
What do you mean? Like
his wallet?
Not enough. I know that Amir talks about it all the time. I think they use, basically, the two guys are like crypto purists. So, like, we trust them. I think they've used Litecoin. Like, they're basically, they work intimately with Amir and Amir's software. So,
right.
I believe that it's something worth doing.
I had I spent hours with him over the weekend at Libertopia, Paul Pway. We went to their, event now at City Tacos in San Diego and Bitcoined up, talked to the owner there and so on. I downloaded the wallet. I went to the little ATM and got me, half a Bitcoin to put on it. And I am shocked. It is the grandma adjust button I've been screaming about on so many levels.
Wow.
When you use it, creates a new address every transaction automatically in the back. It uses Amir's whatever Libit coin stuff or something. Then it has keeps accounting and creates a CSV file that you could have your account even looked by your accountant. He can't spend, but he can see all the transactions, and it's like a credit card statement. Every single thing you get, every time you send a request for payment, it creates a new wallet, a new address, so when somebody pays it, then you know who it is, and it has all the transaction information in there and everything. It's secure, it's secret, it's anonymized, it's all encrypted, everything on the phone. They have nothing that's not hashed out and encrypted. So even if I change phones, lose phone, rip phone, down the entire encrypted package repopulates my phone, and they don't know. And even if they did break into the account, all the wallets, each one's encrypted separately, and they can't. And I'm going, wow, this, and it works better than any banking software. And I'm just going, I mean, just easy use, grandma just button. And then, of course, it has all the location stuff, and the guy's close to you, takes Bitcoin, and this, I kind of have the directory crap. But I'm telling you, man, this is, I call them, they retweeted the crap out of it. I go, man, you're like Elon Musk for Bitcoin. Well, they like that one. So
they're good guys, I just haven't had time to use it. I've been hearing about it for a while, and of course,
Don
tells me all about them.
Don. I mean, what I've been screaming, you need to check it out. I'd really like to get your opinion on it, because it's like, wow. Questions, it was scary how they had an answer for every one of my questions. It was that scary.
To help you make you find Darkvault a bit easier, I mean, there's a lot of crossover.
Well, here we go.
forum.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Okay, let's get down to it. Cody Wilson, help me out here. When you did the ghost gun and you were kind of making fun of them trying to say, gee, they could do this, this would be bad. You go, yeah, we could do that. We did it. Now what? And I'm wondering, there had to be some agency or somebody say something.
No. Well, no. I mean, that, as far as I know, no authority has approached us or, interdicted or tried to do anything to slow us down. You have to assume you're being surveilled. And recently, I mean, by like 2 days ago, a law enforcement officer, and a local law enforcement officer, let's put it that way, sent me one of these FBI sensitive briefings where it was like, warning, local extremists, anarchists are preparing, and they were telling all about Cody Wilson, this crypto anarchist who's selling ghost gun machines so people can have, firearms. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I'll have to send this to you, Ernie. I've got a screen cap of it from the law enforcement officer, but it basically was like, warning, some people believe that people have the right to bear arms. It was like the FBI was totally briefing people on, oh, there's still some people who don't believe in slavery.
Well, so this officer was just trying to give you a heads up, or?
Yeah, yeah. His email to me was like, the FBI are fucking stupid. Oh, sorry, man. I'm not supposed to. Anyway, but he's like, yeah, the FBI are idiots here. I want you to see what they just sent out to all of us. And I was like, oh, thanks, man.
You know, I got that when I was doing SAFE, Second Amendment for Everyone, or whatever, back in the early 90s. And Sheriff Arpaio sent me a Southern Poverty Law Center thing that SAFE and me, we were at the top of the list because it went alphabetically in Arizona. You know, it was the first, like, you know, gun group or something, right? And all it was a political pack for an initiative for unrestricted concealed carry. And so we're like the head top of the list. And he goes, Ernie, you're on this list. And I go, yay, I made it. You know, so I don't care. So this is like, you made it, you know. So is it really mean anything to you other than that? You know, legitimizes what you're doing?
No. I mean, do you want me to read it to you? It's very brief.
Yeah.
Okay, let me see if I can get it. Just hold on right there. Basically, I think it was just kind of like a compendium for law enforcement, like, oh, hey, by the way, in case you didn't know. And it also does some...
It's kind of like it's a fusion center thing. You know, it's like they wanted to have the ability to get it down to every law enforcement officer in the country. It's like an Amber Alert for freedom activists, you know. And what they did with the fusion centers, they can go from the Department of Who Gives a Crap, and they just send these memos out, you know, most wanted or most worn or most something. And I remember these in the 90s during the militia thing. You get all these reports. Ooh, this guy. Ooh, in your area, watch out for this guy. Ooh, you know. And I'm going, it's almost like you want to get a book of all these announcements, and you see, man, the trend is the state versus freedom. I can tell you.
That's what this is. But it's kind of cool how densely they pack it. Also, they take a swipe at Second Amendment people as well. They accuse me of confluence. But let me just give it to you. It says unclassified.
All right, into the mic. We're losing you a little bit.
Hold on. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, it says unclassified, law enforcement sensitive, anarchist extremists, Defense Distributed, a nonprofit anti-monopolist digital publishing company, is promoting the sale of the Ghost Gunner, an open-source 3D printer capable of producing firearm receivers for handguns. By following some very simple instructions, potential users can manufacture non-serialized mil-spec receivers. Cody Wilson, the founder of Defense Distributed, intends to move past receivers and introduce open-source, freely downloadable, full weapon systems to the public. Wilson is self-identified crypto-anarchist who believes in the Crypto-Anarchist Manifesto, a call for cypherpunks and cypher-anarchists to bring about an age of free-flowing data backed and secured by robust encryption methods. And then they talk about the Liberator, and then they say, the likelihood of Second Amendment extremists and anarchist extremists influence is likely increased in this regard as freedom of information and the right to bear arms becomes a common goal.
Oh, my God. That's an advertisement.
Dude, it's like a warning. As the Second Amendment becomes a real thing, watch out for people that have guns.
No, this is an advertisement. This is like, I mean, you're going to start getting a lot of orders from policemen, I guess. I don't know. That is an advertisement, man. I want that. Yeah. We got to put that up. That'd be awesome.
That's one where the Texas law enforcement are like, what the hell was this? And then, you know, because it's just the feds compiling something. Everybody, you know, everybody I know down here, even in law enforcement, is tend to be more like oath keepers outside of Austin PD than anything else.
Oh, this is wow. It just reveals their attitude. You know, we're all livestock, and that was one thing that segues really well into this Bitcoin effort is the presentation that we had economic group last night on Bretton Woods and so on. I'm going, and I'm sure you probably, you know, memorized more about it than I ever, you know, read. And I'm going, I can see what it made it much clearer to me what the threat of Bitcoin is. It was all post World War II, hell, even before World War One. Heck, it's what started World War One and Two. I mean, all this crap, our livestock is our livestock. And it's just competing geographic gangs with flags that, you know, want to allow or not allow access to their markets where the man gets their cut. You know, it's just like a you know, the tax, the tariff, the cut, the duty comes to me right here. These are our slaves. And they had to create some kind of clearinghouse thing for, you know, the slave production to be kind of balanced out and who wanted to do trade. So I could see all of a sudden I'm going, wow, I need to go buy more Bitcoin. This is, I can see your infatuation with this at a fundamental disruptive, the planet goes a different way, humanity marches on level. And the Bitcoin Foundation kind of represents the attempt of the legacy system to integrate it into what they want so the people don't get free, which is why you're like, you know what? And we need to make a target out of the Bitcoin Foundation to reveal that, whether you win or even get the run or not. How far off am I?
I think it's pretty close. I think you pull a punch in the end, though. It's not, I don't think it was the legacy systems at work and bringing us to them in the foundation. It was us, like this quote-unquote community, and our own illicit desires to be regulated that created the Bitcoin Foundation.
We need a permission slip. It gives us validity.
Yeah, there you go. And we've had these conversations before. So it was, I've seen Gavin's original post, and now we need to talk about this too. The foundation now is basically saying, we're sorry, without saying it, by claiming that they're going to a grand pivot with their new director. And, you know, they're saying, oh, we're not going to do policy anymore. We're going to do development. And I don't know how much of this you know.
No, I know nothing. That's why I got Mr. Cody Wilson on. We're going to get right into it. We're going to hit the break here pretty soon. So yeah. I don't want to get too deep into that. But what I want to do is the philosophical part behind this is the things that you said that the players, and mainly it's, you know, the exchanges, they didn't want to run afoul of the man. But they still wanted to act like them. They wanted to create a conduit, a convergence with the system, and to do that, they wanted to get permission. And we can become gazillionaires, PayPal, if we only got permission and they allow us, and please, sir, can we have some more? And that sent them down a bad road that was totally, you know, the opposite of what Bitcoin was going to promise as a people's currency. And when they did that, some people noticed what was going on, like Mr. Cody Wilson. Close.
Yeah, man, and let's, I don't know how close you are to the break. Ah, there it is. So, yeah, let's start with that thread when we come back, and we can unpack a couple of those pieces.
Yep.
Solution against the public.
Yes, this is, you know, this is why Cody, you see why we're going to have a whole nother hour, you know, to go over this with Cody, because I just knew, and we want to get stuff, we just want to catch up, see what's up. You know, he's busy with a lot of stuff. Ghost Gunner, in time for Christmas! I'll be camped out on my front porch.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona.
Yeah, Ernie's getting one.
I appreciate it. And we've done all this. I don't know if you saw a recent update. I tried to update everybody who ordered one, but I don't know if I added the Bitcoin people. I think I might have forgotten. But, you know, the new machine, the form factor hasn't changed, but we've got a new mill in there. We've got a new spindle, upgraded motor. We've upgraded power supply. So it's improved on all these levels, and yet the cost has actually fallen. So it's one of these incredible, it's just like our development has improved just because we were able to receive so many orders, and so we got all these interesting price breaks.
You know what I saw? I just saw it a couple of days ago. It is a device, a 3D printer kind of thing that changes heads, and it's a mill and a 3D printer.
I think I've seen this.
I don't even know. I just kind of whizzed by it real quick. Oh, yep, of course. And it 3D prints, and then you put the mill thing on, and it goes and mills it or something, you know?
Yeah,
and I'm going,
yeah.
Okay, it's manufacturing, distributed manufacturing changes, and distributed money, and distributed internet, distributed. They are screwed. And that's another thing I found out. Paul Pway met with David Irvine at the Texas Bitcoin Conference. I didn't even know David was at the Texas Bitcoin conference. I found out at the end of it from Rafael Rodriguez, you know, even about this thing. I contacted him, had him on, then I went to New York to meet him there. So Paul said he's like 4 hours with David, and they're, you know, impressed with each other's whatever, and they were kind of overlapping on some of their code and such. He using that. Then he's using Amir, and he's just, you know, it's like he's really a smart guy. He hadn't doing some development. He's his own, you know, code monkey himself, but he had did so much coding. He had a lot of wrist and hand problems, so he kind of had to stop it for a while because he literally couldn't, you know, do the keyboard. So now he's kind of in a more supervisory, you know, make it go where this is the features that I want. So I spent a long time with him. We went until we were done. I mean, it might have been 3 hours. And I go, the main thing that I wanted to know is why. You know, where does this come from? What's behind? What drives you? How is it that? And I'm telling you, man, it's all this philosophical. They got screwed by the man, either in taxes or health care or parents or fathers, and loved ones died of cancer with the wrong medical kind of deal. It's the system. They realize they're against a system and they want to attack the system. And that's where, you know, Cody Wilson leaps to mind. You know what I mean?
I'm hearing you. Yeah. For me, it's not so much about preserving like a moral principle, like, well, you know, it's wrong. And maybe we can talk about that with the foundation too. I mean, it's for me, like with this angle with the foundation, I don't know how I'm going to get this out well, but it's going to be about like a philosophy of cruelty. Like, I mean, we should sacrifice it, not because it's wronged us so much as only in sacrificing it and giving it the justice of death will it bring us all back together. It's a ritual, man. It's a ritual of celebration, like only, you know, in the old medieval sense, like, well, we kill it so that we can start the cycle again, so we can all be pure again, you know. we can regain some of our innocence and act like we have a new leaf to turn over. I mean, we can't preserve the foundation. To preserve it is to have endorsed.
Yeah, I don't like joining. As soon as Bitcoin starts having a, you know, organization, what always happens? The organization becomes more important than the reason you created it. I mean, that's what always happens. All right, here we go.
And we should bring that up too, man.
Yep,
here we go. FM, that's amp.lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Oh, yeah, the pictures up here is Tim Fry from Roberts & Roberts gave Cody. These are 45 slugs. They look like 45 cartridges, but they're pure silver. And he said, you know, here, it's, you know, we kind of, you know, milled or 3D printed, whatever, you know, some pure silver bullets for you. Here you go. Which was very, very, very cool. You know, the one thing I want to bring up, we get right to Cody on the Bitcoin Foundation thing, is this. We call it Steiger's Law here. You hear me say it a lot. And this is like a neon flashing example of it. Whenever you create an organization around a cause or a movement, sooner or later, the organization becomes more important than the reason you created it. Every single time. And I'm just, you know, if you want to support something, you know, you support it as an individual, you support it as a group, you support it as an organization or something. Don't ever think that, you know, the organization is there for the benefit of whatever the common, you know, goal over a lot of the people that see the disruptive technology. Sooner or later, that organization is going to be more the focus than whatever the reason was. And the Bitcoin Foundation, neon freaking flashing example of that. Yeah, how far off am I on that one, Cody?
Yeah, I think so. But even in this appraisal, we managed to preserve some false historical innocence of the foundation. Gavin and these people who started the foundation might have had some original innocence in wanting to start it. But from the very beginning, as far as I remember, and most people who were around a couple years ago, this was an organization of businesses actively seeking advantage and colluding against the public. It had always been that. And they were seeking, you know, policy frameworks to promote their own business interests, and in the name of developing infrastructure for the public. But it was always first colluding against the public.
That's creating a monopoly. I mean, it's just like everything else.
Yeah, it's indisputable, man. So to act like, well, you know, at first it was good, and then it lost its way. No, that's actually what the foundation itself is arguing right now as a reason we should preserve it. Well, you know, we didn't know what was up, but now we realize what's going on. No, it was always colluding against the public. And I'm not saying that to say that, well, no, it deserves our... No, I'm just saying these are the facts. And now we have a more, even interest. So you quoted a rule there. I would offer one of Conquest's rules, the old conservative. I think it's his third maxim or something. Conquest's third corollary. I forget what it is, but it's like, if an organization isn't explicitly right wing, it will always become left wing. Have you heard this before?
No.
Well, there's a variant of this. So basically, if an organization as charter isn't an explicitly right wing organization, all organizations tend to become left wing organizations. So maybe my suggestion here is if an organization isn't specifically a Bitcoin organization, it will always, no matter what, become an authoritarian organization.
And well, I'm more like organizations always become this kind of centrist, statist, us board kind of crap. I mean, you know,
you've got a better point. I think my thing is, like, because there was it doesn't matter. Your point's the better one. Now we have, you know, at least back in the day, we had people saying, well, look, true believers run this foundation. We have John Matonis, you know, Hushmail, he's a libertarian. We had these board members who were libertarians. Well, they've all reached their moments of infamy. They've all been expelled. The organization's form has been retained, but now all the critical positions have been replaced with industry insiders, you know, policymen, statesmen, you know, and these
shiny badgers.
Exactly. So now we have, for the first time, like in the global, oh God, what's he called? The global policy consultant, Mr. Harper. We have a whole group of figures who just purchased their authority by being kind of acquired by the foundation, now being folded into the foundation, as its membership and directorate. So the libertarians have been slowly squeezed out of the organization, like we probably should have known. And it just becomes an organization built on preserving itself. Right now, it's in a humble rent-seeking phase where it's like, well, please, let's justify our existence. And it's claiming it only wants to do core development of Bitcoin. It wants to stop talking to the Army and the CIA. And we can talk about that. But, I'm seeing is a not innocent organization.
Well, now you can start to understand. A lot of this stuff isn't understood until you kind of go through the process several billion times and you get older. And that's why I call these guys shiny badgers. They'll come up and they say, and they start with their title. I'm the Bitcoin Foundation, the director of the blah, 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 blah. I go, yeah, blah. Who gives a crap? You're just a shiny badger. You know, look at my shiny badge. And this is when you have the original people that came in wanted, they get the street cred and the people that really know and they could see the disruptiveness of the technology, wanted to preserve that. And how can we? And they're okay, we might interface wide adoption, all this crap I keep doing. And I'm going, you know, you want wide adoption? Get a better wallet. You know, have more security. Dude, I was really impressed with Airbits. And I know that he's been using Amir Taki's Libitcoin and some of the stuff. And they based and kind of they're picking from around the industry and people and kind of building a good product. And I'm going, you know, cool. And then the still dark wallet, we'll talk about that, what's coming there. But, you know, the thing is that I can see that the good actors have been pressed out, which was predictable. You know, I knew that would happen. And you get to the point to where I'm a shiny badger and here's my shiny badge and policy is, and we protecting the monopoly and us. And I'm going, okay. So then when I heard at Libertopia this weekend, hey, did you hear what Cody's doing? And I go, I did not, you know, well, what's he doing? Or it was before that. Yeah. We were on our way to Libertopia. And of course they were talking about it. And then you were kind enough to call Donna that we'd schedule that you'd come on. I go, we'll talk about it on air, man, because we're busy there. But I'm going, I want to talk about it on air. Tell me everything. So you came into this. Okay, you guys are bad. You're bad. And we want to make sure we tell everybody how bad you are. And how do you plan on doing that? What's your plan?
All right, let me give my platform. This is the first time I will have publicly discussed it. Is that you want me to give you my platform?
Do it, man. Go. You got like 2 minutes.
Okay, it's got four planks. All right. So this dissolution. I mean active dissolution. All right. The foundation's overreaches are not just a betrayal, and you can go with betrayal if you're libertarian. I just don't think that we should tolerate any kind of organizational recalibration. I believe that in a philosophy of cruelty here. I think that death is the only acceptable penalty, corporate death, not just because the foundation is criminal and should be, you know, it's rotten and should be, you know, cut off from us. Just that it would restart a cycle of celebration and solidarity with the community itself. So if we can sacrifice the foundation, perhaps we can all come together and then start new cycles of organization and conversation. But basically, the foundation's reputation hangs over our heads. The statements of its global policy council, the, you know, Mark Karpeles and Mt. Gox and Charlie Shrem's infamous participation with the New York Department of Financial Services. I mean, it's a poisoned legacy. And so I think dissolution is the healthiest and most communitarian response to what has happened here. That's plank one. How much time do I have?
Minute and a half.
Okay, reputation. Now, this is for me. I think I'm a perfect complement to the Bitcoin board because I'm already adding to such an illustrious gallery of rogues and frauds and charlatans who have already been on the Bitcoin Foundation board. Mt. Gox was a beautiful example of a total charlatan and mountebank using the foundation to mine his own ill will to take advantage of the public. I think Charlie Shrem is a great example. Plenty of people have been accused of money laundering and untoward business activities and illicit activity on the foundation board. When I'm finally arrested for one of the things that I do, I can further help the foundation's reputation in this regard and confirm it as the treacherous organization that it is. Denunciation. Now that the foundation has failed, it is critical to throw open its records, denounce the, and let's be honest here, this is a failed experiment. All right, it's over. Everyone's admitting that it's over. The only question now is, well, do we preserve it as an organization and continue to do something with it, or do we basically throw open the body, have an autopsy, and talk about what went wrong? I say we have an autopsy, and in the true Assange sense, we really give to the public what happened. And my final point is Jubilee. We give all the Bitcoins away and ask other developers to come in and protect the code base.
Okay. This is, you know, you can see why we need another hour with Cody Wilson. This is, it's because it needs to be done. Who better to do it? And that's one thing that's of interest. You look at the shady record of all these guys on the Bitcoin Foundation and, all this. I mean, you know, being arrested, not that I care. I mean, a lot of the guys that were arrested were the good guys, you know, and the people that weren't and how they used it to, you know, scam everybody. I mean, Cody Wilson being added to the board would benefit their image. It's like, hey, we need to, let's save it. Cody, come on in. We'll make you, all this could be yours. You know, go ahead. Well, we love vanity, my favorite sin. Woo, Cody, you're so good looking. You must lift. Oh, come on in. We'll give you a shiny badge. Don't you want your shiny badge? Okay, now we'll go ahead and start. I'm going to go ahead and go to the bathroom real quick, and then I'll be back. We'll have the news play and so on. We'll start right in the next hour because I don't want to do a whole lot of this off air because, this is all good. Into the next hour. And now we got all this other crap out and so on. Now, the whole next hour, we can focus on this part because a lot of this stuff interrelates, but, you know, we get into the good when we come back, okay?
For sure.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
This is the Liberty Beat, your daily source for Liberty news and activist updates, online at thelibertybeat.com. I'm Brian Hagan with your Liberty Beat for Thursday, November 20th, 2014. Gold closed Wednesday at $1,179, down $15. Silver closed at $16.06, down 9 cents. And Bitcoin is trading around $376.45. Today's Bitcoin price brought to you by ExpressCoin, the fastest and most reliable way to buy Bitcoin. Buy Bitcoin today at ExpressCoin.com. The Liberty Bean is brought to you by Marjorie Wildgrass Grow Your Own Groceries. Homegrown food on every table. That's growyourowngroceries.org. In the news, White House officials, speaking on condition of anonymity, say President Barack Obama will announce today executive action on immigration that will sidestep Congress while shielding millions from deportation. The Associated Press reports the administration is considering steps that would provide work permits for up to 5 million immigrants now living illegally in the U.S. On Friday, Obama plans to hold a rally in Las Vegas focused on his decision. A veteran of the United States Navy was fired from his job at a hotel after posting pictures to Facebook of Federal Protection Services and Department of Homeland Security vehicles near Ferguson, Missouri. Mark Paffrath says his boss and the head of security at the Drury Hotel admonished him for taking the pictures and fired him. He says he was told he dishonorably served his country during his 3 years in the military. CNN confirmed that the DHS does have additional units in Ferguson while awaiting the grand jury decision. The Government Accountability Office has released a new report detailing a lack of accountability for federal funds used at federal fusion centers. Fusion centers are run by Department of Homeland Security and operate as information sharing centers for local, state, and federal agencies. These centers have been criticized for violating civil liberties and privacy and wasting taxpayer dollars. The Electronic Frontier Foundation says the report's suggested measures aren't necessarily meaningful. Today's edition of the Liberty Beat is made possible by eFoods Direct, redefining the way you think about storable food. They've created a menu of food that is so good, so easy to make, you'll find yourself eating it every day, even though it has a shelf life of up to 25 years. eFoods Direct is offering 10% off to all Liberty Beat listeners. Just go to eFoodsDirect.com/LibertyBeat or call 800-620-5520 and mention Liberty Beat for your savings today. Support for Liberty Beat comes from The Corey Moore Show, live each Friday night at 10 o'clock Eastern. Liberty-minded, comedy-focused. That's The Corey Moore Show. Listen live at CoreyMooreShow.com. This is The Liberty Beat for Thursday, November 20th, 2014. Check out the website at TheLibertyBeat.com and like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TheLibertyBeat. A 56-year-old Houston woman was sentenced to nearly 2 years in prison for mailing a letter threatening to kill President Obama. Teddy Bear Paradise pled guilty in August after admitting to sending the letter. She said she was traveling to Washington, D.C. to kill Obama or would hire people to assassinate him. On Tuesday, a judge's ruling was overturned regarding whether small drone aircraft fall under the regulation of the Federal Aviation Administration. The National Transportation Safety Board reviewed the appeal from the FAA and found that the agency has the authority to fine operators of small drone aircraft. The appeal was related to an aerial photographer who was fined $10,000 for operating his drone in a reckless manner on the University of Virginia campus in 2011. The ruling does not address the legality of commercial drone operation. To mark what would have been the 30th birthday of Brittany Maynard, a Right to Die advocacy group has issued new video footage of the terminally ill woman. In the video, recorded in August, Maynard calls on more states to enact legislation allowing the terminally ill to end their life on their own terms. Maynard, who had brain cancer, moved to Portland so she could use Oregon's law to end her own life, which she did on November 1st. The Liberty Beat is made possible through the support of Midas Resources Incorporated, helping clients convert their paper 401ks and IRAs to solid gold and silver. Get their 10 Reasons book free by calling 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237. Want to reach tens of thousands of like-minded listeners every day with your messenger product? The Liberty Beat is looking for sponsors for their daily news service. Support this grassroots media project while expanding your reach to a targeted market. To inquire further, visit thelibertybeat.com/advertise. This is The Liberty Beat for Thursday, November 20th, 2014. I'm Brian Hagan, reporting, reminding you, spread liberty with a smile.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear. You know, I tell you, the Bitcoin Foundation may have the fear because this is how it's playing out. Bitcoin blockchain technology and such is that that was the whole point. It's distributed. You know, it's peer-to-peer. Here's its math, and here we go. You know, and they build applications, you know, for its use and such. Well, somebody wanted to, you know, I don't know who it was, some guys decided that, well, we need a foundation. We need, you know, we're going to have to create a face. We need somebody to go out there and do something and, I don't know, negotiate with somebody. And you go, okay, well, who do we get? Yeah, that government. Government's always good to elevate us and credibility. And we're the guys, and they come talk to us, and we're the guys and get monopoly of protecting our guys. And I'm going, okay. But the whole technology itself was such that it represented itself. It was down distributed, you know, like defense distributed. You know, you 3D print your own gun, your 30 round magazines and so on with your logo on and everything. I'm, you know, getting caught at Logan Airport with it. That was bad, but I got it back. So you sit there and you go, okay, this distributed trait of Bitcoin means that no one can represent it. That was kind of the point. No, we represent it. No, you don't. Yeah, we do. No, you don't. Yeah, we do. And they go, we represent it this way. We're good. We're good. And then we're bad. And then the people go, you're bad. So we don't need you representing and done. Okay, so we'll, Cody Wilson, I'm going to run, you know, on the platform of disillusionment of the foundation. Yeah, but if we don't have the foundation, then who will be the foundation? That was kind of the point. Nobody. So I, you know, let's talk about that, Cody. I mean, the whole idea of whatever they thought they were doing, are they doing? Or I mean, what are they even promising they're doing?
I love that setup, man. My friend Michael Goldstein is a director of the Satoshi Nakamoto Institute,
mm-hmm.
and you can argue that this is what the role of a foundation should have always been. It was the Satoshi Nakamoto Institute is just a collection of the literatures of Bitcoin, both technical and philosophical. That kind of explained to people just what's going on here with this software. But instead of offering you like an alternative, all I'm trying to do is introduce Michael. Because Michael once said to me, well, look, when we had email as a technology, we didn't have an email foundation. You know, we didn't need a popular body of interested industry representatives to make sure that the government didn't screw over email and protect and preserve email. Email was so successful that it was basically adopted by everyone, and it, like most internet technologies, spread quickly enough and standardized relatively easily enough without centralized influence, that it became a popular standard, you know, in its own organic way. I mean, and this is central to traditional anarchist theorizations. You didn't need a policy organ to set the tone for Bitcoin. If it was going to be what it needed to be, we would have figured all of this out. Is that clear?
Yeah. No, it's, you know, see, they always want to put it's a parade that they want to jump in front of. So you have, you know, the people just start mad. There's a need. There's a desire there. And those that won't leave us alone, be they government or whoever else. It's a philosophy. It's a mentality that we're up against. And when they see, look, a parade, we can glean a whole bunch, make some money, get some positions and direct the parade and go down. Oh, turn down this avenue. You know, they want to jump in front of the parade to represent the parade. And look, all the people that we got.
Right.
We're influential.
Right.
We got a big, giant, humongous, take it to Washington. Shiny badge.
Well, that's exactly where we are now, too, because Harper and these people that they've brought in, these are just lobbyists and lawyers that they've brought in from K Street and think tanks. And now they've successfully written on the foundation blog. I suggest people go there. By the way, I know this all sounds small and petty, but this is anti-libertarianism in action. So it's great to, like, crack it open and look at it in process, because this is how it always goes. So they've written a policy retrospective now, and they said, like, look, you know, we had an ugly history as a foundation, but think of how much worse it could have been.
Nah.
Thankfully,
Merck was there, and we were there, and we prevented it from being worse than it was.
No!
And so thank God that we're here. I mean, you cannot ever get a different argument than that. And we all know, everyone in Bitcoin knows, that the BitLicense exists because the Bitcoin Foundation approached New York DFS and not the other way around. And that's just one example.
You know, I got to bring this up. What comes to mind, I saw a documentary on 3D printing, and it really came down to, you know, head maker bot guy philosophy selling out versus Cody. You know, that was one thing where I recognized in this bio, the printer Stratasys that you got to do the gun, isn't that the company that bought up MakerBot?
Yes. Yeah, the movie did not do a good job of explaining that. But yes, there are only it's a kind of duopoly in commercial 3D printing. There's 3D Systems and Stratasys. And basically the first open source 3D printed company got bought by the first company that totally kicked me out, you know, and revoked its printers. So it basically, the whole tension was these mega corporations and their closed systems or gobbling up everything and then forcibly excluding all market entrants who have a different kind of political economic vision.
In that movie, they kind of glossed over it and kind of, you know, half sentences gobbledygook, and it came down to this. The ability to sue based on any kind of real evidence that you had some technology or patent infringement or something like that was not, it went like this. Well, to protect our corporate interest and our control of the market share, we will use lawsuits to beat you into submission, whether it's valid or not.
Oh, right. So you're talking, so for the people listening, the company 3D Systems is basically credited with inventing modern 3D printing, and though this is true, they're, as a business, they built their business empire on acquiring basically every important patent related to stereolithographic technology. So they have this incredible portfolio of patents, and as Avi Reichenthal is fond of saying, at 3D Systems, we have more patents than we have employees. And this is a mega corporation, by the way. So what they do to protect their position is traditional marketing. Collusive activity, traditional monopolistic activity. When a market entrant comes on the scene, they just assume, and they can just kind of argue by analogy that, well, what they do is similar enough to one of the patents that we have that we can know without even looking at their technology that we should get an injunction that they're likely violating one of our patents. And that's how 3D Systems staved off for a couple of years some disruptive companies like Form Labs and other startups that wanted to come in and provide people affordable STL printers on their desktops.
Yeah, now Form Labs, I think, is the heroes in that are depicting them. Well, I like the technology. That's the one with the laser and the gel or something, right?
And right, it's STL.
That was freaking awesome. I'm going, wow, this is recent. This is disruptive. This is, changes the planet. And this is why, you know, perfect examples of why I'm so against this intellectual property thing. It stifles so much. Yeah, but who in the profit? And I go, no, save it. I'm past that. I don't believe it anymore. Okay, I don't care. This is, innovation is stifled with all this monopolistic kind of, and that's one thing. I was at Coins in the Kingdom. I was having a long conversation with Andreas Antonopoulos, and I go, you know, I'm getting to the point, you know, where is the security? He goes, well, it's going to be at the wallet level. You know, Bitcoin, you know, default is pretty transparent. It's going to be at the wallet level that you're going to be finding the things that you want. And he goes, we'll talk about it when we come back. I want to, you know, finish explaining that story. But I'm telling you, you know, are we going to have some time where somebody representing Bitcoin Foundation or a lobbyist go and advocate for monopolistic protection against these people innovating? Yes. Yes. That's what's happening now. Yeah. Andreas was like, yeah, of course. You know, I think her initials are Perry Ann Boring, you know. So
I should. Go ahead.
Well, no, Perry Ann seemed nice enough. I get along fine, you know, whatever. But, you know, she's positioning herself to be the digital chamber of commerce to go lobby in Antiperdy and give me some legislation protecting somebody, something that's paying me to protect them. And I'm going,
you can have all that.
Yeah, I'm just, if I got to go even talk to these guys, it's the wrong tech. That's my point.
You know, if I got to go negotiate my freedom with somebody, it's the wrong technology for freedom.
There's a coin center, I think, in the Valley that's going to be the new, like, Bitcoin lobbying group. And, I mean, there's a whole, you know, multiplicity of these things. It's not like we kill the foundation and we can all go back to the Shire, you know.
It doesn't matter. Government's going to say somebody represents something. And this campaign that you're doing, what it does is it announces is that the people in support of Bitcoin for its disruptive, its distributed people money, you know, across the planet, and the unbanked get to be banked without being surveilled. You know, the fact that that exists and is the goal, by doing that, it forever brands this effort. It forever brands them and anybody that comes after them. It's either they, them, those. I mean, you're either leave me alone or you're not. And I'm glad that you're doing this. And I understood immediately when you go, I'm going, yep, I know exactly where this is going. It's like, you know, me running Secretary of State going, still voting.
Right.
Well, the process, we need to get into the process eventually, too, of actually doing it, how you're able to, you know, do, and how they would be able to prevent. You know, I mean, that's interesting right there, you know.
There's been talk of that already. I doubt they'll do it because I can probably get enough press on them just preventing me from doing it. So they'll let me in. But then the thing is, in the end, you have to just appeal to the foundation members, which are only like, I think, 1,200 people, and most of them probably industry interested people. So it's kind of like, I mean, the whole point is, like you said, really just calling out the lie at the foundation of the whole organization, which is that it's a group of libertarians interested in preserving the future of Bitcoin. No, it's probably a group of industry interests that are just like any other organization, just seeking their back channels with regulatory groups. Like it's always been.
You know, one thing, I've been trying to get Eric Voorhees, he's not having it. He's just like, man, I don't, you know, I just, you know, no, we're not getting whole. I haven't really made the full court press on my end. Donna's been trying, yeah. But, you know, yeah. This Dominica thing, the bit drop, I had Sarah Blinko on talking about it, but, you know, Coinapult, given 73,000 Bitcoin wallets and $10 each, you know, it's a $1 million project. So you go, all right, here, and they see what happens. That's going to be, you know, some nice data. But, you know, I'm going, I don't see the world letting a whole country, no matter how small, you know, get away with this without some destroyers off the coast. You know, I mean, you know, what do you think is going to happen with that?
I remember you saying that. I think your original point is the best one, which is that, like, well, they couldn't do it without going through a central financial agency, right? Like, it all had to be documented, and that's the scarier part. Like, they couldn't have just given it to everybody. It all has to be kind of registered somewhere.
Well, yeah, the data, I can see it's enormous. Well, that's one thing with the Airbits. You know, there is, you know, metadata of, like, where you went and the location and this and that. And, of course, they pinky swear open source. Don't go take a look. Like, I know what I was looking at. You know, that, you know, it's not, it's all encrypted. It's not assigned to any wallet and all that kind of stuff. So that has value, too. So I can see the value in all this stuff. You know, it's just that, you know, I just want to remain free. All right, here we go.
Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock and Cody Wilson. He's going to be doing, bringing out some information, you know, attention to some details that we all need to know. Because I already know where this goes. It's they, them, those are going to co-opt some organization or something that's got, you know, the shiny badge or the logo or some goodwill in the industry. And now we represent you and look at all these good guys that we got and they're gone. And we replace them all with lawyers and lobbyists from K Street to go to Washington, D.C. and please, sir, may I have some freedom? And oh, by the way, get rid of these guys so I can make a bunch of money and I'll give you some of the money and it's the money. You know, and I've seen this happen. You know, I'm old enough to have seen this happen with Microsoft. You know, Microsoft, you know, the antitrust lawsuits, Netscape, and, you know, Orrin Hatch from Utah, blah, 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 blah. What it came down to was you didn't pay enough money. You know, now, if you had an office in Washington, D.C., and you were sharing out with some congressmen, then things would go your way. And seeing as how you didn't, you know, so these are the lessons that we learned. Our first, this, you know, Bob Levy from the Cato Institute, the guy that did the, you know, Heller versus gun rights thing in Washington, D.C., spoke at our first Freedom Summit in 2001 talking about this. You know, I remember, you know, him going through the process. Just, you know, all things can be solved with enough lobbyists and enough cash going the right places. But I tell you, the big lobby is, it's the banking system. It's they, them, those that want to get their cut, and you're not allowed, and where's... And as we went through this Bretton Woods discussion last night at a group that I go to, it was very clear to me how disruptive and to whom. This, we have ranchers and their cattle inside fences called countries. And they're like, you know, to get access to mine and access to yours and in and out and kind of how much, and we get our cut. When you do Bitcoin, all of that goes away in a snap of the fingers. And I've been waiting on, you know, the just button. Dark wallet, you know, is still yet to come out, but a lot of that was research and done by Amir over there, Amir Taki, working on that. Got adopted into Airbits. We got the MadeSafe protocol and the storage. We have Mox News, you know, gets shut down. 65,000 videos taken off of YouTube by Google. Why? Because you got Leon Panetta, Secretary of Defense and, you know, and CIA director, the past jobs he's had. I'm like, damn. He's on the BBC saying, yep, multi-generational war. Here we go. We got to get us some ISIS. And what does ISIS do? We're going to gold-based dinar. Well, that'll guarantee get you, you know, your capital bombed if you had a capital. So now we're up against an Islamic State without a state and this distributed people kind of with gun stuff that we supplied. And oh my God, this is like, what a mess, Bitcoin. Bitcoin comes in and bypasses all that crap, goes down to the people, and somebody's got to represent that. Who better than Cody Wilson going with a campaign against the foundation? Now, the foundation, they're going to make some kind of effort to, I don't know, they're going to try and stop you? Is there a mechanism? Is there, you got to register to vote? I mean, tell me how this process works, Cody.
Yeah, I mean, it's, so here's the thing, and I keep thinking I'm going to bore your audience with this kind of stuff. It's like, well, only the foundation membership and participate in elections for the board of the foundation. And this membership is not very large. It's rather select, and people have pay in from year to year. So it's also changing as well. But, yeah, they've got like an election committee and all this other stuff. They, you know, there's a nomination process, which I believe is largely internal. So they can at any point probably screen me from running. I don't believe that they will do that because I've been public enough in my intentions to run. So it's better for them that I run and then they show that I am defeated. So I believe that I can at least goose them enough into letting me run. But you know, like my challenge is this, and basically the purpose is, look, not a reformation purpose. I mean, it's not like I'm saying, oh, well, if I run, I'm on the board, the foundation will behave. No, I literally believe in and will promote its active dissolution. And where I can't, you know, force dissolution, I can at least name names, and I can at least prevent consensus and all the other important things. So like the foundation's trying to say, well, basically they're trying to say that the libertarian argument has won, and that we're going to just focus on core software development. Well, we've heard that before, and basically my argument is that like this, we can't excuse the past, and the only way to really overcome and become into the future is to sacrifice this thing and break it open.
Well, what sacrifice together would it be? What function do they have?
There's a lot of money. There's a lot of money, and there's a lot of developing talent that's marshaled by the foundation right now. But this is not to argue that it's the group that needs to be doing this. I mean, any of these programmers, these rent-seeking programmers, and go somewhere else, can find patronage somewhere else, and other people can actively patronize and support the development of Bitcoin outside of the organizational husk of this Bitcoin foundation. I mean, the principal, you know, like, let's call them crimes. The principal crimes of the foundation are not something that can be excused. We can just pardon and then allow this foundation to continue.
Well, name some of them.
New development. Well, like I said, making Bitcoin legible to power. That's been the entire program of operation, and it's an ideological one. So what started as a group that's like, well, we're about outreach, we're about education, we're about development of the code base, became principally paying lobbyists in, bringing in Global Policy Council, speaking to all levels of intelligence, the military, and regulatory authority, and then exporting that model across the world to different governments, not just the United States. Those became the principal activities of the foundation. And then, of course, the whole bending the policy curve toward the interests of its industry representatives. So a collusive capitalist program, and then a regulatory ideological program, which neither have anything to do with the promotion of Bitcoin as a technology, and even in truth, its core development. So we can take them at their word and say, look, sorry, we've really kind of messed things up the past couple of years. We're just going to tone it back and focus on development now, please. Or we can say, look, this is not a stable organization. Its personalities of leadership give us no reason to believe that it can even contain itself to this new curtailment of its mission. And we can abolish it and then all feel better about ourselves, knowing that there are other specialists in the world who are already operating on all of these fronts. So development of different, you know, Bitcoin D isn't the only Bitcoin out there. And there's other lobbyists and there are other groups doing these things. The Bitcoin Foundation has just wholly sullied its reputation. And at this point, is no longer even an effective development tool. Do we even want somebody with such a weird criminal and checkered reputation doing Bitcoin development? I mean, it's got a history. It's got a record. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
what
no, my thing is...
sacrifices.
Well, you're talking around... Let me go ahead and ask some specific questions, and you'll understand my point.
Sure.
When the Bitcoin Foundation started, I'm like, who are these guys? Well, it became obvious to me that it was a... who's going to provide the interface with the banking system? Who's going to be able to go to the bank and you have dollars turned into Bitcoin into dollars, and not have the government come and shut you down for money laundering? Well, they wanted to have the ability to build a company based on that we can supply this interface between legacy commerce and whatever, and they get their cut and make the government happy, and then all of a sudden now Bitcoin is there. And my complaint was, I'm going, if you go down that road, sooner or later, the actual development of Bitcoin will be more about, you know, providing the desires of the government than the people.
This is Donna Hancock with...
Right?
Yeah, sorry, man. I kind of got... I don't know. I was trying to stick it to one strain of thought, but I kept switching.
No. This is fine. See, my thing is that I could see, because it always happens. Sooner or later, it's going to be the organization. Well, the organization is what? And you can see it morphing right before our eyes. It always was. And that's why I really love Drew and Davi and Bitcoin Nut Bombs. They're at, you know, was San Jose with their, you know, Darth Vader outfit. Give me your taxes, you know? And so we understood from the beginning, you know, that this is what was going to happen. It was going to be, and then even with some guys, I don't even want to name them, you know, but a lot of the guys that I think good guys, they thought that their Bitcoin is going to shoot to $5,000, $10,000, whatever, with wide adoption. And to them, wide adoption meant government, you know, acknowledgement or endorsement or some crap. And I'm going, man, this is way bigger than I think you guys understand. You're not looking at it from an historical what you're really up against. These guys don't go quietly into the good night, and you laid on your back, you put your ankles up to your ears, and you said, Uncle Sam, do me, please. You know, as long as I get a permission slip and a acknowledgement that I let you do me or something. And I'm going, well, that never works out, you know. So this is, I can see what they were thinking, that it was good. The value in the Bitcoin that they had was going to shoot to the moon as long as they had some government, you know, slip. And I'm going, no, that's not where it's going to come from. It's going to come from, in the long run, certainly from all of the features that I was promised. The anonymity, the speed, the efficiency, the cost, all of these other things that I was promised. And then as you're developing more and more of that, it starts evolving into this, you know, tracking system for the man. And I'm going, interface plug-in mode, NSA here, done, thank you very much for playing. And I'm going to think, they go, no, that would never happen. I'm like, why wouldn't it happen? Well, that'd be really hard. Oh, you mean like you need big giant computers and unlimited resources and, regulatory capture? You mean like that? NSA stuff? I mean, you mean like that? I mean, really hard like that? You know, and you sit there and see the conduit for this stuff in the Bitcoin Foundation. And I'm going, I don't need to go any further. I already see where this goes. So when I talk to Andreas and I'm saying, look, man, how is it? Why should I not be afraid? Explain it to me. And he goes, well, when this goes, you know, it's like a dozen of us or a couple dozen of us in the core that we look and this and that. And I'm going, whoa. Oh, that it's not one guy, it's a dozen guys or something that I'm supposed to depend on. And I'm going, wow, I feel so much better. You know, I'm going, you're killing me, man. You're sitting there making a perfect example of what I'm talking about. You know, who are these people that approve? Who's the 51% mining thing? Who's the, I go, how is this done? No, that would never happen. Okay, never. How would it have to happen if that, well, they have to do this? I go, then that's what they're going to do. I mean, seriously, you know, so I can see it's a philosophical battle for the blockchain technology and the Bitcoin. And I'm going to, when we come back, I'm going to ask you specific questions about attempts to divert the code in such a way to make it easier for the IRS to get your capital gains. If we know how much that Bitcoin was, and then when you spent it in the latte of it hit the system and taxes taken right then and the increase in value in mine now, you know, because that's what they're looking for. Is an interface.
We're not going to have that. I mean, I'm not going to give you an example that you would like. There's the
no, that's fine. We'll just talk about it. You can tell me. Here we go. Okay. Here we go.
Okay. .com.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Mr. Code Wilson. Okay, this is my thing. I'm going, you know, my concern from the beginning, I always say this. I go, if they, those won't leave us alone. If they can maintain, enhance, expand their intrusiveness, control over the rights of the individual in order to serve whatever interest of, because they can. If they can, they are. And they go, Ernie, do you think that they, I don't know, can they? You know, is it physically possible for them? Well, then they are, or they're sure as hell trying. Is blockchain technology and Bitcoin itself such constructed in such a way that they can't, all right? Is it such that they can't? Well, if they can, they are. And I need to know, can they kind of divert this into, now of course they're going to be doing it with the companies that interface. If you want to go and spend dollars and get Bitcoin, and Bitcoin dollars be the white Bitcoin, black Bitcoin, it's approved Bitcoin, we know which one that is and who to know your customer Bitcoin kind of thing. But I go to Libertopia and it's been quite a few times, and the Coins in the Kingdom they had, I mean, it goes to a little ATM, I go, I put cash in, I get Bitcoin anonymously put to my wallet. That's an anonymous wallet of anonymous. And I'm going, okay, how long is that going to be allowed? You know? And so I need to ask Cody Wilson the question. Can the Bitcoin technology be coded in such a way to benefit they, them, those, and won't leave us alone, and it's not the people's currency anymore? I mean, can it? And if it can, how would they do that?
If we're saying, can Bitcoin be diverted in such a substantial way as to be a pure reporting technology, like, well, you seem to me like you're asking, well, can there be that authoritarian back-end insertion into Bitcoin? And while that may not be possible in the way you're thinking, like a direct kind of Trojan horse into Bitcoin code, we have seen enough, like our adversary is powerful enough, controls enough of the nodes of the internet, and has enough of different kinds of attack techniques, even like we've most recently seen from a report from MIT, that they're able to basically take modern Bitcoin and prove that even its pseudonymity means nothing. The entire network can be analyzed with the kinds of technologies that they have to, and even transactions which are thought to be anonymous on Tor can, with proper analysis, reasonably be linked up to an identity. So even over Tor, they can penetrate anonymity. So our adversary, right, we can say, can significantly reduce the functions that we kind of sell Bitcoin on, those being anonymity, these kind of liberty for financial freedom and these kinds of thoughts about Bitcoin. Now, about direct reporting to financial authorities, we don't end up needing that in the end. A lot of people come through the human infrastructure of Bitcoin. It's corporate infrastructure like Coinbase and BitPay, and these organizations already have certain reporting requirements, so you're already going to get that coming through that infrastructure. So when you take the entire environment together and then add on new industry collusive principles like these Wendover principles, you don't even need a Bitcoin foundation, and you've seen that the entire ecosystem is skewed against the privacy and liberty interests that Bitcoin, as at least as a pure technology, would seem to represent. So it's a long way of answering your question. Yes, it's just all with indirect pathways.
Yeah. Well, it's, they're going to take the technology that allows for you to be leave-me-aloneism and just make it illegal. I saw Ben Law, what's his name? I don't even want to say his full name. Screw him. You know, I'm giving him legitimacy. But,
yeah,
you know,
the superintendent is who you saw. He's the superintendent.
Of what?
That's his name. He's a superintendent.
The New York the Department of Financial Services guy, he gets up, and he's like, glad-handing everybody and kind of probably smoking dope late at night with the boys, and we're all buds and everything, and we screwed you. And he gets up, and he gives a speech a few weeks ago, and it was going, we're not going to regulate the miners, or, heck no, we need the system to work. We don't want them to worry about it. You just keep spending money on the mining and the transaction product and the other piece. But if you're interfacing with dollars in any way in the banking system, kind of, we can't let you be a money launderer. And I'm going, bad actors, money launderer. And what they are saying, when they say money laundering, I know exactly what they're talking about. You're not allowed to be private. That is their main goal. And I'm going, because it dismantles the entire We Rule You system. So when they're doing that, and the Bitcoin Foundation isn't actively against that, then what good are they?
Yeah, that's a good point. I actually take more issue with his first statement, but to your point, the libertarians, without a fight, gave up on money laundering. I don't know why. I think it's this reductionist, this distillation attitude, which is like, well, if we just rally around adoption as just the ultimate principle, then we win no matter what. Well, no, they gave up without a fight. Money laundering, because they weren't, they weren't even prepared. I mean, this is a problem, right? It's a generational problem. I'm sure that I'm guilty of it as well. When libertarians don't have glib opinions, they then just have a raw immaturity. They don't have the philosophy to guide them into thinking, perhaps no interface with authority is the most serious position. So anyway, all these libertarians thought that they were being good and judicious and wise by participating in all these conversations. And look at what Lasky said. Now, we all know, as you and I, Ernie, as people who participated with these bodies and fought the fights over the years, that money laundering is in the vocabulary of the national security state. The reason it's so principally important to the State Department and to the New York DFS is that it is the elemental justification for the statutory schemes which govern this hardened, closed-loop system that is Treasury's you're-in-you're-out club for the global financial flows. And that's how the United States administers and projects its soft power. Well, I mean, it's a form of hard power, but that's its soft power. You have to come into the fold with a NATO-backed kind of vision. The way they let you into the fold, is if you agree to all the principles, is they let you use the financial system. Right, and if you're a rogue state, a terrorist group, ISIS, they don't let you into the financial system. Well, this power only works with Treasury if they can define the system for themselves, regulate all of the nodes in the banks, and make sure that they can control who can and cannot come into this closed loop. Bitcoin explodes that, or should have.
It's already doing it. Anyway, it's like the United States is just going to be carved out. And they're going, but we're the biggest market, the biggest, and it's us in this hegemonic, ancient, philosophy of we rule you, and we're the top dog because we got bigger aircraft carriers. And I'm not sure they even see that the rest of the world is just abandons that system. I mean, you got half the world's population, 3 billion people unbanked, and here it is in a week they're banked, and then what? I don't see what they're thinking. It's buggy whip people.
Man, look, it's not about it's not about the banked and the unbanked. I mean, maybe a banker would tell you that it is. It's really about this. It's about this soft power, and it's about you can call it the neoliberal attitude. The idea is, like, we control access, we control the flows. I mean, that's what's at stake. And the money laundering conversation is a national security raison d'etat conversation. So it's not about criminals. It's not about Silk Road drug dealers. It's about the very elements of who controls access, right? So gun control, think of a money control. We're talking about money control here. And money, like money laundry, is the word that they lob at us like a grenade that makes all the undisciplined anarchists and libertarians scatter.
Yeah, but I think that's going away. I think this campaign on what you're, because when you came and spoke at the Freedom Summit, there was another Bitcoin gentleman, without mentioning names because I like them, they're good guys, but they totally different philosophy. They came, they wanted to be there to be on tape to call you a money launderer. Well, you take all the wind out of their sails, first thing out of your mouth, well, I'm here to wash your money and money laundering and dark wallet and squeaky clean money laundering. Okay, get over it. Yeah, well, I'm glad you admitted you're a money launderer. Yep, I'm money laundering. So this is just to take the wind out of their sails. Well, look, it's called privacy. It's called autonomy. It's called, leave me aloneism. And this, I don't have a problem with this money laundering thing. They can't say it loud enough and long enough for me. I'm just like, let's get it. Yeah, I want to have squeaky clean money laundering. How can I have a wallet called the money, bit laundry? Bitlaundry.com.
Did you know that free aid is a mutual aid education?
That'd be a good idea,
I bet you exist.
I know. If it doesn't, it does now. Somebody did. So this is, that's the real, I would say, goal. It'd be a good feather, to have. It'd be, we eliminated the stigma behind money. It's the same thing with pirated software. It's getting to the point where people, they're just not into IP anymore. I remember when I had Stephen Kinsella on the show the first time. I've had him on a few times, but the first time I had him on, it was all, man, let's go at it. I want to, and who calls in? Scott Beezer of Big Head Press, does a lot of my covers and so on early on. Uh-huh. And I saw him at Libertopia, too. He's doing well. And he's like, it's my designs and my. And he's totally changed. I mean, time has gone by. He's seen too many. It just doesn't work, And So intellectual property, that concept, in just the last 3 years, I think it has totally turned, and I think for the same reasons and in the same way, the term money laundering is going to kind of go the way of intellectual property support. And now, of course, it's not with government agencies or the older generation or whatever. And that was a point I was making last night, at this event, as I'm going, I can see all of this support of government controls and edicts and allowances and permits and all that kind of stuff. It's a generational thing, and it's changed. The people even under 40, sure as hell under 30, are like, suck it, this is all bullshit. And they find out how much innovation has been stifled because of some, monopoly granted by the king. And that's going away. And one, what you're demonstrating is that it's not possible anyway. That's the point.
I think that's a good way to put it, man.
Well, I mean, that's your shtick, right? You're like, hey, and it doesn't matter. Oh, and thank you for pointing that out. And I'm going to use your comments in my video.
I was thinking of your comments on the culture on money laundry, so I'm still thinking about that. But yeah, of course, man. Obviously, you know where I'm coming from with this control mechanism and stuff.
Well, the thing is that I'm hoping you're seeing down the road. This is, Cody Wilson's got a bead on it down the road, and that by taking these positions, even in the documentary on the 3D printing, it was awesome that you use the same arguments and philosophy, that you're using for the Bitcoin thing and for the 3D gun and Ghost Gunner and all that. It's the same battle. And a lot of people don't see that. And the education that you're getting in so many, the Second Amendment community, the political community, the 3D community, the, maker space community, hacker space community, Bitcoin community, libertarian community, anarchist community, this, having this example and a pure philosophy like this is invaluable. I know this. from experience and seeing, you know, the people that move and shake and have influence on the future humanity kind of thing. I get it, and I want to help. But I'm behind the scenes and the players in this on the foundation thing. Let's start calling out some names, you know. Now, Gavin, you know, I understand that he's, you know, he's coded, he understood and got, and all of a sudden he's got a paycheck from somebody, and that controls all or not. I mean, where would he be in this? Is he doing it full time now? Or so let's talk about, you know, the actual core guys working on the blockchain, what, you know, would happen without the foundation. We'll get to it.
Free to listen to. It's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Wow, wow, wow! I feel good. I knew that I would not. I feel good. I knew that I would not.
So good! So good, Cody Wilson! Gonna help me out here. Oh, you know, this is, let's talk about the people involved with the actual development on Bitcoin. And a lot of this, you know, of course, it typical, you know, you'd be, all right, well, who's working on it? Oh, this guy. Oh, well, we need to give him a paycheck. Who needs to give him a paycheck? Bitcoin Foundation? We just hired you. Man, if that wasn't going to get you up for right there. So let's talk about that, Cody. Tell me how the Bitcoin is being worked on. Why is it being worked on? What's the work on? And the fear that we have, and then, you know, the fact that all of a sudden the guys working on it, Bitcoin Foundation, comes up and says, hey man, you need a paycheck, you know, tell us how that all worked.
Oh, that all happened organically, man. So basically, you know, the history of, if you remember Satoshi, this mythical figure Satoshi, basically everyone who got the keys from Satoshi basically helped form the center of gravity around which the foundation, like, organized and crystallized. So there always was like a developmental core, and it was always a main argument of the foundation that, well, what we do is development. And to their credit, like even back in the days with Mike Hearn and all these people who have since kind of moved on, they were always setting the agenda and had the most resources for doing work and cleaning up Bitcoin. But what I want to argue is, and so like we'll talk about the personalities, okay? And there's little criticisms for each one. I don't want to get petty, but the big thing to think about is, instead of thinking like of Bitcoin as one bed of code, think of what the foundation does and the foundation's work on Bitcoin as just a code base. Okay, there's other people working on other Bitcoins, if that makes sense. And maybe that might seem uncomfortable or unnatural at first, but that's the way you got to think about it. Like, there's no one email client. You know, there's not one email foundation. There's plenty of people who've contributed work over the years to something, to a larger, grander system. And before you let the argument come in, they're like, well, there's industries that depend on Bitcoin now. Look, a lot of these industry people themselves can add to this kind of work. We don't need necessarily people who were originally intimate with Bitcoin D, to continue to be the authorities in development no matter what. And another argument is, that, yes, just because the Bitcoin Foundation provided a check to developers doesn't mean that other people can't provide a check to developers. So I want to separate all those things out from the outset. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. So I have no strong criticisms of Gavin, for example. Amir seems to have the strongest criticism of Gavin, which is that he's just an appeasement kind of guy. If the government was to say, look, you got to wear a star on your jacket, you know, he'd wear it, you know, he doesn't want to be offensive. It's this species of libertarianism that believes in the inefficacy of authorities, diktats, like, well, whatever, you know, if you want me to get a license, I'll get a license. It doesn't really affect me. It's this kind of like appeasement based libertarianism, which is like, as long as I'm not being really impeded in my duties and what I want to do, I'll kind of go along to get along. And Amir is probably right that like, This is a species of libertarianism that deserves our contempt. And in the end, can you even really call it libertarianism? And maybe that's what all this comes down to. It's like, well, at what point is there like a disobedience angle to Bitcoin? Or is this all kumbaya and we all just believe that no matter what regulatory disadvantages they sprinkle over on top of our human infrastructure, Bitcoin will win no matter what? And actually, a lot of people literally believe that.
No, that's their argument. They're going, look, we're going to give the red pill, yeah. You know, to government, and we'll wrap it in cheese.
Yeah,
they won't
yeah,
get,
exactly.
I've heard that. You know, that's what they say.
This is the internalization of your master. All right, and we're called naive. You know what I mean? We're called naive. I mean, at least we have been. And when I mean you and I, Ernie, and I'm sure a lot of your audience. Like, at least we have had time to confront actual authority, see how it takes people on, and look at the foundation. Now is a beautiful object lesson. Look at how authority, without hard pressure, and truly in the end, I mean, almost with Kafkaesque ease. Look at how authority beckons your own creation of new servitudes. You know, the Bitcoin Foundation, if anything, was instrumental in the creation of whole new sets of servitudes for the new businesses and market entrants to come in Bitcoin. Look at all the new hurdles that the Bitcoin Foundation helped us create. Now, in the end, that's one of the only things you can say that it's done outside of the software development.
Well, Bitcoin represented it was right at the time that we were doing the silver dime cards and the silver calculator and all that kind of stuff. And we were promoting that because we knew it was eventually going to come down to walletvoting.com. I got wallet voting in like 2003. I remember the first time I got that site, I was, doing radio and I'm going, I see where this goes. It's not voting. It's wallet voting. It's going to be, how and where, and they don't get, because it's like one thing that Ron Paul made a good point during the campaign. He's going, the banks, the Federal Reserve, the government, they're both get a cut on both sides of the transaction. And as soon as when I realize, I'm like, damn, man, that's a sweet scam. And when you bypass that and you take them out, there is no central plan for Bitcoin other than, whatever the individual does with it. And I'm going, okay, I can see why this. And then, of course, I didn't understand the tech, but I understood the promise. And as we start working through the technical part, I could see where the philosophy would diverge. And it always is where it diverges. It's where you start having industry or corporations or companies can come in, but they only work when you can exclude other people that aren't filling out the right paperwork. When you go up to the man, you say, I will fill out the right paperwork. I will submit to your authority. I will get, structure it in such a way that we can. And what is it you want? Whatever you want, I'll give it as long as I get to do my thing. And they go, yep, well, we want, your customer stuff. We want this. We want that. Okay, we can do that. Well, Bitcoin, allows for that to be bypassed. And that's where your dark wallet thing came in. It's always been a psyop. That the capacity that you have to really inject what this is really about. And by you're running for the board and doing this on the platform of eliminating it, just that, it doesn't even matter if you win or not. That's not even the point. It is to bring up and chronicle all of these arguments and this show and whatever your campaign material is and all the points that you bring up, that they're never forever and ever and ever and always are going to have that on their record. So what's going to be the alternative? They'll create another organization. That's going to happen sooner or later, right?
Yeah. My argument is this organization has run its course, all right? And it cannot claim to have ever truly represented libertarian technologists, though that is now its principal claim. As an organization, it has only been instrumental in creating regulatory problems and basically selling the name of its libertarian constituency, and now there's this sick need to kind of preserve it. But, I mean, if anything, preserving the foundation only harms the libertarian interests in promoting Bitcoin in the future. We have to kill it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've never saw really a need. Are they antiquated? I mean, is there some role that they can even play? I mean, Scott, when I heard Ben...
To allow that, Ernie, and I'm not trying to be moralistic here, but is to excuse the behavior for a while and then to allow it to bubble back up, let's say when Bitcoin begins appreciation again. There's no... They have a track record. And, they cannot not stay out of K Street politics and lobbying. They can't stay out of it.
Well, does Bitcoin allow the technology as it is now and likely to continue care? I mean, is this water off a duck's back? I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, that's kind of been my argument. I go, look, man, if I got to worry about, you know, these organizations and guys and sling a little money here and a couple of lobbyists and Schumer gets up there and pounds his fist and blah, 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 and they, you know, arrest the guys from Silk Road 47. I mean, you know, I'm going, you know, at some point, at least the people understand it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter.
We're going to have to worry about this for a long time because, again, what's most vulnerable and important right now in the Bitcoin economy and ecosystem isn't the technology, but it's human infrastructure. And its human infrastructure is wholly co-opted right now. You know, I think it would be restorative for the libertarians and Bitcoin to come together and depose the foundation. Good for the libertarian and Bitcoin.
Yeah, no, I'm hip, you know. So when's the election? Is there some election scheduled or something?
Not yet. It's all too soon. All new year. Maybe I'll come back on and talk about it.
Okay, well, when do they don't even have an election, a schedule, or how you get in and run or something? Is there?
No. I think it's all for next year.
Okay, so they have no schedule of elections or participation or being a president. So who the hell appoints a president to begin with? How does that even happen?
Well, it happens by the membership. But basically, man, like they'll announce the schedule, and we can be more up on the process in some time.
Well, so you had nothing to announce to go in. You just said, you know, I announce, and they go, damn it.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. It's all like it's always been for me. It's a bit about preemption and just getting the ball rolling, you know.
Yeah. All right.
Free talk.
Yeah, now we can just talk a little bit. I get to my next guest in studio here. But the one thing that I want to stay on top of this and, you know, not find out from everybody else before I hear from you, you know. So
what?
No, that you were going to run, that you made this announcement. You never told me. I didn't get anything.
Oh, well, I actually, I was on an interview about Ghost Gunner, and I just told the guy, because he told me Matona stepped down. I was like, you know what? I announced. Like I just did it right there.
You're looking for the opportunity. Okay, cool. Yeah. See, it's still not clear how they do this. You know, it hit the ground running, man. When you said that, it boom. Everybody wanted to make sure I knew, and I'm like, really? Okay. So this is when you say, okay, well, I'm going to run for the board, and I go, damn, how do we have board members get run to begin with and how we select? And it starts bringing up all kinds of stuff about how the organization is structured, you know? So that, yeah. I mean, that's going to be an education right there.
Exactly. It's opportunities to show people how all this stuff works. But, you know, in the end, we might have to come up with stuff like, you know, the Democrats do. We'll do like foundation membership registration drives and, you know, pack the rolls of people who might be willing to vote. Might even pay people to do it. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I'm here. You know, show up. With, yeah, we blip you. Yeah, absolutely. We're paying you with Bitcoin to come.
Yeah,
because you know,
right,
we can't.
Right.
Well, they do. I mean, it's same. You know, it's just be open about it. You know, you want to play this process organization. This is how it works. You want to play politics?
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's one thing that happened during the Levolution is that the Republican Party and these guys, they, you know, we got the little secret, whatever. What they didn't know is that, especially certain here in the Southwest, that we've been doing this for a long time. We know their little back door, how it works, and Robert's Rules of Point of Order bullshit. And we went through. You want to play? We'll play. And we did. And it got to the point that at conventions, they just turned off the lights. They just went. They went over literally to the switch, turned it off, and we're done. You know, and it took years of a lawsuit in Nevada before they got the ballots out of the hotel safe, as that's how bad it was, and revealed that Ron Paul won all the delegates. And that's why they turned off the lights. They just could not have that. So the thing is that it's going to be very revealing of the Bitcoin Foundation of what happens in the process of you doing it while they're doing the turn off the light syndrome. And I'm going, okay, well, if they don't, and you go on crop, they go, well, then it's dissolved. It's not doing what we want, so we don't need it anymore. Well, yay, but then they'll go do something else. So in the process, you have people that are still head down plow working on the code. You know, how does that affect them?
Yeah, I don't know, but a lot of these people deserve to be a bit uncomfortable because we didn't do this on your show, but the foundation has actually afforded them a sense of undue authority and importance. This guy Garza comes to mind. I mean,
well, we're still recording, so don't get too, you know.
Yeah, well, these guys think that they're important and like unduly authoritative.
Shiny badgers.
Yeah, they're employed to do, you know, chief scientists of Bitcoin. It's kind of Gavin's, but you know, things that like make a lot of people uncomfortable. Like, executive. Like, you know, things that seem antithetical to the idea of a democratic, open. You know, oh God, I can't believe I used the word that way, but you know what I'm saying. So,
yeah, shiny badger.
Actually,
shiny
I think
badger.
It's okay to show a little code monkey. Right there, we go. How much of how inconsequential he is, especially when the foundations of his organization begin to crumble. Time to go find that rent. So, you know, it's not bad necessarily that they be uncomfortable or clutch their pearls a little bit.
Well, I'm looking at the time schedule. I mean, you're going to be busy with Ghost Gunner here too, and you know, when's keep me informed, man. Don't be, you know, have me find out from everybody else. You know that.
Oh man,
you know,
I wasn't telling anybody. I told one guy in the press. I didn't do anything else.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it launched. I mean, it didn't take much. I mean, you know, it was like, hey, did you hear? I'm going, seriously. You know, damn. Okay. Yeah. So I go.
Well, good. I
understood right away. I'm going, yeah, I already know where this goes. This is a PSYOP. It's another Cody, okay?
Yeah.
Here we go,
Michael,
and I want to help.
Mike Gogolski is my campaign manager, so he's helping me do a lot of stuff right now because obviously I'm busy too. But
No. Have him contact me. I want to get in on the – there's a lot of stuff we can do to help. You know, a lot of, you know, just creating of, okay, you know, buzz and art and putting up on a regular basis and Freedom's Phoenix. And, you know, I, you know, got in with a bunch of other guys. We can make sure, of course, you know, Daily Paul's going to be all stupid about it, and then we're going to have
– okay.
I mean, let's rock, you know, because
– Well, then you're my man. We'll run everything through you. We'll do – updates through you. I'd love to get art and stuff and coordinate and all that.
Yeah, no, I know a bunch of, yeah, hell yeah. I mean, I don't want to be responsible for anything other than whatever hell I want to do, but I want to do a lot, you know? So the thing, you know, send me your goodies if you got any kind of logo art or some kind of something. You know, like Davi, you know, he did a personalized logo for Andreas. And it has, it's really cool. It's that kind of a Greek font, Andreas Antonopoulos, and Andreas has his head down, you know, showing his widow's peak. You know, that's kind of the logo of looking at the top of his head and his eyebrows. You know, it's kind of, so
cool.
So he's doing, and what's your thing on Andreas? I mean, is he a good guy or, you know, I
think so. I'm uncomfortable with a lot of the guys in venture and a lot of the real prominent. Look, they try to represent themselves publicly a bit softer than what their supposedly real philosophy is,
right.
You know, but more my concern is that like that suggestion that they have harder philosophy is actually just a play back to like red meat for their base when actually they're more like, they really more are like statesmen.
Yeah. He does it so well though. I mean, you know, I really like him and I think he's got, or at least understands the philosophy, but he's right in the middle of it. And he's sitting there playing. When he did his speech to the Canadian Senate, that was awesome. I don't think he pulled. Did you watch that?
I didn't, no.
No, so. Watch it. You'll see what you're dealing with. You know, you'll see what the, you know, the state, how he is representing, you know, Bitcoin. You would enjoy it. It was an hour, 2 hours. It was a while. It was a long
time.
Good thing.
Then. You liked it then.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
Yeah. But I think it, more importantly, you need to watch it just to see, you know, how he is interfacing with a Senate government Canadian sitting there asking him direct questions and how direct and how crafted he was in representing, I think, an uncompromising view of what's coming. And I really encourage, matter of fact, I had Patrick Byrne on a few weeks ago and he was on his way to the airport. He had just given the speech. I watched it. I said, put it on your phone, watch it. And he said, yep, I want to watch. He's watching on the way to the airport. Perry Ann Boring sent me an email, goes, yep, you were right. You know, I'm going, look, this is how, because Perry Ann doing the Digital Department of Commerce thing, and I'm going, yeah, if you're going to do this, do it like Andreas. If you're going to do it, you know, I don't know if she can do it that way, but I mean, I would watch it. I think you'd enjoy it.
Okay, I'll watch it, man. You know, my suggestions are less speeches and more dark wallets, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but, no, and he's kind of, you'll see. You'll see what I mean when you watch it. You'll trust me, man. You just
understood.
Go, okay, Ernie, he wasn't such a communist. All right.
No,
so,
understood.
Hey, I got to get to the next guest in 10 seconds here. Cody, thank you very much. Don't, you know, be a stranger.
Yes, sir. All right, man. I appreciate everything.
You bet. Peace.
Yep.
From the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear! No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Also, very nice weather. It's very nice weather. Go outside, it's very nice weather. I don't know, 70, whatever the heck it is. I mean, heck, I get up in the 80s sometimes. So I'm just going, yeah, and I look at the news and sucks to be y'all. I mean, wherever you live, it is like, you know, there must be that global warming thing. I'm going, damn, you know, seriously, I really feel bad for someone that has 12 feet of snow up against their front door and they can't get out and they just might as well use it as a refrigerator. I mean, you know, I'm, and a lot of people do. I get a lot of pictures people send me. And look, all the beer is kind of stuck in the snow and I open the door and there's my beer. So damn, you know, that's why, you know, moved to Arizona, man. Call Donna and you can hook that up. But we have a lot of people here in Arizona that are getting ready, you know, mentally. We just need to, you know, I'm still all about that division of labor and everybody kind of do their own thing and, you know, and you participate in a larger economic efficiency of I did this and you do that and we trade and barter and we all live better life and everything. But at some point, man, a lot of the stuff you just need to do yourself. You know, I'm really about, you know, shelter. You know, just, you know, can I have some place that I don't have a permission slip clipboard of I just don't want to die over here in Lone Prairie kind of, and when it gets that bad, it's not going to matter. You know, it's just, hey, leave me alone. And so shelter, you know, too hot, too cold, too wet. You know, you have food, you know, you're not too hungry, water, you're not too thirsty, you know, and I like the nicer things like electricity, because that's one thing. We had Joel Skousen on yesterday for a couple of hours, and his main thing, he goes, yeah, it doesn't matter when the electricity goes down. Now, all bets are off, you know, when people are, you know, no electricity means a whole lot of none, a lot of stuff, refrigeration. I mean, heck, just keeping, you know, food cold, you know, power. And you know what? I can get through a lot of days with my access to internet, satellite-based communication is coming up. I get my computer going. I got entertainment on my television, watching movies and chilling with the grandkids by the wood-burning fire in my dome. I mean, I can probably do pretty good that way. And we start having the ability to just feed ourselves, you know, until, you know, we recover from whatever the heck is coming. Because, man, it's, you know, he was thermonuclear war, man. It's like, you know, that's been his thing for decades. You know, here we go, sooner or later. And then, but in the end, what did he have? You know, at the very end of the show, at the end of the archive, at the end, we put it in the archive yesterday. It is a plan for the next government. That is his deal. Here is the reconstruction of the Constitution of how we should live, and it's better, and it didn't work last time. We got a new process. So I'm going, okay, you know, that, you know, that's what Joel Skousen is building up to. You go to yesterday's archive, and you see that. I'm not about is there going to be government? Yeah, probably. I mean, you know, something somewhere, but the smaller the better, and all the way down to the individual as far as I'm concerned. And that's what I'm advocating, and why Cody was such an ad, you know, to this whole discussion, is because Bitcoin blockchain technology allows for a whole bunch of interrelation, and with made safe and storage and distributed networks and satellite and all of a sudden, everybody is a sovereign nation.
Well, part of that is the tech to be actually be able to do it. I mean, you know, to keep breathing in and out, you know, and feed yourself and so on. And while we were at the Prepper Fest in Scottsdale here, I came across a gentleman that's in studio now, David Wright. David Wright, he created, you're seeing in the graphics that we put up there when we were there. We had the dome and everything. It's a golf cart with a wind power generation on it. And immediately what I was thinking, I'm going, you know, I have all these batteries and stuff you got to deal with, and you have some storage and so on, and where do you put your little power unit? I mean, I, you know, get it up on my property. The fact that I even kind of bug around a little bit and carry my batteries and moving and going and kind of, you know, plugging into whatever power source of the satellite, I mean, the solar or the windmill or kind of, I'm going, wow, what a cool idea. But I want to get to know David first, that why he would even do this. So let's go ahead and talk to David. Welcome, David Wright, to the show. Welcome, David.
Hey, how's it going?
There you go. I got the right one here. Okay. Tell me, David, your background a little bit. You know, you kind of, all of a sudden, you showed up at the Prepper Fest, but you're the only golf cart, windmill, making power, buggy, portable battery guy. I'm going, well, that's cool. Why did you do that?
Well, for a long time, I've been dealing with renewable energy sources. And a lot of those renewable energy sources, I had provisional patents based about 10 years ago. And those provisional patents were based on controlling the speed itself by utilizing permanent magnets. Permanent magnets aren't like stators. Permanent magnets, as soon as it passes over a coil, it begins to allow the free-flowing electrons to move, creating power. And the faster they go, well, the more power you get. It's pretty easy. And then I was thinking about it. I said, you know, if the end does come, I mean, there's three things we're going to need. We're going to need food and water. We're going to need shelter. And we're going to need power. So once I realized, you know, we need power, but then I also realized, you know, me, I've been injured. And after I got injured, I said, you know, I'm not going to be able to run with three little guys. And I'm not going to be able to do it very fast. And since I can't,
so you
do
have
it,
three children.
Yes.
Always a motivator.
Oh, they are. So I said, you know, three little guys that are under the age of 12, they're not going to be able to, you know, hike 12 miles. They're not even going to be able to keep up a pace on a 5-mile journey. So now I have to be mobile. And at the same time, when I get to where I'm going, I'm going to need power. I mean, if anybody gets sick, God forbid, but still medication. Medication starts to lose all of its potency outside of a 40-degree temperature. At that point in time, it becomes obsolete and months, years.
So electricity became a, you get it. I need me some electricity. And then the concept of the, you already had thought that, you know, hey, well, I got golf carts have batteries.
Well, no.
I mean, how did that come about?
Well, once again, I mean, when electricity does fail, if the grid ever does fail, then you're going to run out of pumps. Those pumps are... The electricity is what uses pumps. Pumps pump water. That's what gets the water to your house. Pumps, they pump the gasoline. That's what gets the gasoline out of the tank and into your car. You know, everything is based upon electricity at this point. I mean, there's nothing that you do during a day that doesn't require energy or electricity.
You know, Donna and I have been discussing this, and when we go to... I give you an example. We have a little coffee grinder. We get beans, you know, or she has her favorite crap that I want to touch, my stuff. And then I have my stuff that she's not interested in. So we buy these different beans, and then we grind them in little grinders. And sometimes in, like, even the Keurig that we had as a gift, you know, I'm like, that's electric, man. You know, what happens to go down? How am I going to get my, you know, cowboy coffee? I need my coffee. How are we going to grind it? So when we go on, we talk to some people, and they said, and they suggested, you know, they said, go on the internet, you know, go to overstock.com and look for this particular hand grinder. So we're going, okay, yeah, you know, this is cool. Now we got the hand grinded coffee thing going on. But you can't do that for everything. And you need, I mean, just to, and just the convenience of having a little bit of electricity is just, you know, awesome. And we have our dome runs off the Hope system out here, the solar panels kind of. And I'm going, you know, and we ran into a problem when we came back from vacation a lot because we had taken the Hope system camping and we didn't plug it into the system, so it wasn't the backup to it. The electricity got turned off. My daughter flipped the wrong switch. bunch of fish died because we didn't have the solar backup into it. So I'm just going, man, lesson learned, especially when you need to feed yourself. Well, David Wright has a solution. We're going to talk more about it when we come back.
Help get LRN.FM into more ears. Visit promote.lrn.fm for a free bumper sticker, flyers, banners, graphics, and more. Promote.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Last hour just dovetailed right into what we're doing here. The whole conversation with Cody Wilson is about this this mindset of getting a permission slip. You know, I went through this. I did the same thing back in the late 88. I first started, okay, what Department of Information of a central hub of protection of I get the, you know, and I'm allowed. I mean, you know this mindset of what must be, you know, spooned out of our cortex and just, no. So I'm going, all right. Yeah, that's a good graphic for those watching video. But the point is, you spoon that out of your brain. And Cody Wilson represents that very thing. You know, this Bitcoin Foundation trying to nuzzle up the government and getting wide adoption as a permit slip from some government agent who gives a crap. And the whole point of blockchain technology and Bitcoin is I don't need you and, you know, pace. So I'm going, this is what I want to talk to with David. David Wright, you know, it's more than just, you know, the golf cart thing was just a demonstration to some of the tech. And he is an inventor. He went through, get through provisional patents, which means that, hey, I got an over Unity energy device that I think, and I can kind of, ain't it cool? So Donna right now is calling, you know, Michael Cross White and Brian Gallagher, because they're going to be his new best friend. Because when you got something like they want to evaluate, they got the ability to evaluate it. And, you know, they can tell me, because I wouldn't know. They can tell me whether it's effective or not. And then they want to build it. I mean, they got their own workshops and kind of, and use here and work text, you know, once every month they'll come out and we'll do something, have them, you know, and Dave be our new best friend, okay? But what does he come up against? Well, of course you need to go to the government and get a permission slip. You know, how are they about making energy? I don't know. I just already know, you know? So let's go ahead and talk to David about this. All right, David, you know, you came up with, because you're just one of those big brain box guys, and you came up with some kind of, you know, understanding of electrical power and all the Tesla stuff and everything. You go, we're going to put it in the application, and you go, ooh, I got a good, and I'm going to take to the government and get my, had that work out for you. What's going on?
Yeah, it didn't. That's why there was a wind turbine, and that's why the patent that I did gain had it with a wind turbine on the back as well as a solar panel on the top. The reason being is I realized that, you know, this wind turbine, on limited space, I could travel to where I wanted to go, and at the same time while I was traveling where I wanted to go, if I was in the middle of a desert, I could still charge slowly, very, very slowly, by a solar panel, but at the same time, you know, a wind turbine that extends with a telescopic, you know, at that point, hey, you know, great. But then, you know, it was about, I'd say 8.5-9 years ago, I filed it. I did get a provisional patent, which doesn't give me any protection whatsoever. It just says I've staked my claim in the dirt for something that might work.
No. A provisional patent is the blueprint for they, them, those to rip you off. That's what that
is. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, what happened was is I realized that, you know, if I use X amount of watts, amps, and volts that I'm using to turn a motor, as long as the horsepower or the torque that's involved with that motor has the capability of turning X amount of productive energy. So then I realized that you couldn't do it with just one-to-one. You can't, if I put an electric motor that literally draws, you know, the same amount of amps that my, or within the same span of what I'm drawing to produce, then at that point in time, it's you know, non-feasible.
You're not going to have any extra.
Exactly. But what I realized is, you know, if I sit there and I take a 10-horsepower motor where I only need 8, and it wasn't like I needed 8 on this motor and 8 on this turbine and 8 on this turbine. What happens is I still needed the same 8. It only went up by 0.5 or 0.9. So at that point, I needed a 10-horsepower to turn 3. Now, that 10-horsepower to turn 3, I had an overage of a 2-to-1 overage. However, legally, I couldn't sell it. Legally, I couldn't get the permission to sell it.
Was there a law against selling of an invention? What are you even talking about legally?
Because legally, the patent industry, the moment you say anything with perpetual, even though I stated that it wouldn't be perpetual, perpetual motion is something that is continuous without any other need or 0 point. And that 0 point energy is something that you cannot patent. They will not give you a patent. No matter, I mean, as soon as you say...
Okay, my first question. Here goes, so freaking what? Who gives a crap what they do? Right? Well, so you're wanting protection of an industry, of a making or making money, or are you looking for permission to even do it?
You got to have permission to even do it. They will not issue.
So I don't need an issue to do it. I just do it. Just go do it right now. Go in my backyard and do it. What the hell are you even talking about?
Because if I go to the Prepper Fest or I go to anywhere else and I don't have that permission slip, then
they shoot you.
Well, no, you can get arrested. You can get fined.
Arrested for what?
Well, you know, you can get first. You get your fines, and then if you don't play ball,
fines
it's kind of
for
like,
what? You get here's your fine for your something. What?
Well, you don't get a permission slip basically to sell it. So at that point in time, you know, you get a fine for not having a sales permit. Then you get a fine for selling something that's not. Passing the DMV or the Motor Vehicle Association. And then they say, hey, you can't put it on the road because we're not going to give you a plate because, it didn't pass us.
You're killing me. I understand. Here we just had Cody Wilson on his 3D printing guns, 3D printing 30-round magazines, ghost gunner out of 80% billets of milling thing that sits on your desk. We're having, dark wallets so they can't, track Bitcoin and everything. You came at the wrong time, man. seeking permission. I mean, there's your first problem right there. So this is why we're so anti-intellectual property. It's because we just see so many squashes of innovation that can change the planet. And go, well, hey, Mr. Man, Shiny Badger, a Thor tie with a badge and a gun. I wish to benefit humanity. Well, I'm sorry. You're not allowed.
Well, the thing is if you purchase one, then you don't necessarily have to purchase any more. And when you don't have to do that, then they can't make any money. And when they can't make any money, they're not going to give you permission to not make them any money.
You're assuming that I'm looking for permission, okay? Well. So let's get past that. We'll convert them later, okay? But the point is that you have the technology and ability you're claiming that with your device, you have this golf cart is really just a test bed or the demonstration of what you're doing.
No, what I wanted to do is, during this Prepper Fest, I wanted to get the minds, just like Nikola Tesla said, you can only, the human race as a whole, or the government as a whole, will only allow X amount of intellectual properties to actually flow to begin with. And people are familiar with wind. People are familiar with solar. So at that point in time, a golf cart that recharges itself by wind and solar, their minds are wrapped around. Okay, turbine spins, it recharges. Great. Understood. And at that point in time, it's kind of like starting out in kindergarten to go to senior graduate. You have to learn those lessons between. So at that point now, the next time I introduce, one of the gentlemen at the Prepper Fest said, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is permission.
Absolutely.
So at that point, that's what I'm doing. I'm going to go back.
Ask for forgiveness. Screw them. I don't care what they say. Okay, so this is the help as we go out in the break here. We'll get back when we come in. But I tell you this. This is what, correct me if I'm wrong. What's going on is, let's say I'm driving a golf cart and it has a windmill on the back. It generates, 10 amps. I got, something that needs 3 amps to charge me. I got extra. It goes in the battery, and as I'm moving, it's doing, I got extra somehow, right?
Exactly.
Extra. You know how? We're going to get Mike Crosswhite and Brian Gallagher to check it.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
It's the same old story, same old song and dance, my friend. It's the same old story,
same
old story,
same old song and dance. I heard this before, over and over. It's the same thing. You know, I wish to benefit humanity. I wish to save the planet, save my children, provide a better lifestyle, get independent and not dependent. You want to declare your independence? That's how you do it. You go, I declare my independence without a government form. But, you know, to be independent, you got to eliminate dependencies on what? Well, I tell you, electrical power is going to be a big thing. So this is just representative of a whole different technology that David Wright has been working on himself. He's convinced himself. Now I'm going to give him an opportunity to commit. I'm always, yeah, yes. I believe, yes. Well, we got some guy, Mike Crosswhite and Brian Gallagher. They are all over this, man. We go to Tesla Tech conferences in Albuquerque. We know these guys. We go to different. I'm always looking. Show me. I'm a Missouri guy. Show me. You know. So he wants to show me. I'm like, all right. So show me. Let's do it, man. It's rock and roll. Well, yeah, but the government. You're confusing me with someone that gives a crap. Okay. So there's kind of blocks in here. What can you can't sell, and so I'm going. All right. Let's start talking about some of the tech. The actual platform they put on choosing a golf cart's cool because, like, hey, I can show you that it goes. Now, we had Aurora Tech on, so, and they go to these conferences too, and they want to do it in a little scooter that's self-charging. And I haven't been convinced of their tech. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of smoke and mirrors and stuff and kind of seeing if they get a prototype going, you know, fine, we'll have them back and, you know, show me. But they haven't been to show me yet. Well, David Wright is like, you know, hey, I can show you. Okay, show me. They're going to go to the next Pepper Fest. You're talking about the one that's at Cardinal Stadium. They're going to do in February or something. Or
it's going to be the same. It's going to be the same one, but it's in 6 months. I do believe it's April or May.
Okay, at the Westworld that
yes,
one. Because there was another one. One of the gentlemen is doing an event at the Cardinal Stadium. It's the Boy Scout Jamboree, and they got a section. You know, kind of a preppers fight. It's kind of Boy Scouty stuff, and they want us to participate in that too and show them the dome. Because a bunch of Boy Scouts, they think the dome thing's cool. But I tell you this. Okay, I get a space at this, all right, and I do the dome, and you got something to add to the dome as part of all our dome setup that we had the aquaponics and, you know, the quail and the rabbits and, you know, and all the stuff that we did, and we pimped it out. You know, you want to add this and do it and kind of be and have them done. If you got something to show and inspire these young minds and make me look cool, it's all about me. Okay. You do that, man. I'm in. Done. Next. And we'll go ahead and do that and kind of in peace, and you can help me put up the dump. So we'll do that because I want to help. But I am not going to help you fill out Forbes. That just ain't going to happen. Okay. So let's talk about, you know, the actual tech. Now, you are making or contracting with someone to take like an alternator and turn it into a permanent magnet, different kind of something. Explain it to me.
Well, no, there's a lot of people out there doing it. And what a lot of people have realized is, you know, for a wind turbine, it's pretty much just turning an alternator. You just have to turn it fast enough. Well, the problem with that is once you turn it fast enough, you're still producing minimal energy because you have a stator magnet. Now, stator magnets require a certain amount of RPM or a certain amount of speed in order to start producing that energy or electricity. However, permanent magnets, especially permanent magnets when you're working on a three-phase, they begin pushing electricity the moment they cross over any type of copper wiring or gold or even platinum. The reason being, and DC works kind of differently than AC. Alternating current works on the inside of that copper wire. Now, on the inside of that copper wire is where the AC current can push. It can push it further. It can push it longer. It can push it harder. And you get more amps, watts, and volts longer distance.
And however, you lose less energy.
Yeah, you lose less energy. Yeah, but with DC, if you're working on something small, like I said, you know, even at Prepper Fest, I'm looking at it as, why should I plug my car into my house when I can plug my house into my car? Same thing with your dome. I mean, why shouldn't you be able to drive your buggy up and plug your dome in? When you get to your location, why not have that energy readily available that is producing and productive?
It's like putting a Hope system on wheels.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then what you realize at that point is DC is carried on the outside of those wires. And that's when the magnet, a permanent magnet, as soon as it passes over, it's pushing and forcing those free-flowing electrons the moment it's moving. And the good thing about permanent magnets is you can produce, depending on your speed that you get it up to, anywhere from 1 volt starting at literally 2 miles an hour, 1 mile an hour, all the way up to 1,000 volts going at 100 miles an hour.
Okay, now let me give you some real life example of why this is important. We were up at Rivas Mountain School, which is a like 100-acre thing out off Lake Roosevelt in the canyon up there. A guy named Peter Bigfoot. He's really big on, you know, for decades he's been up there in this canyon. He got kind of patent, you know, from a ranch of, and he has a spring and 20,000 gallons of water a day he goes through feeding an orchard out there. And he has a lot of schools that people come out. They live in, you know, teepees and yurts and whatever, and they help do some work. And he does a lot of tinctures, you know, and uses desert plants and all, you know, so this kind of thing. We found out about him from Dr. Tamburi, where he's going to medical school at ASU. They would go out there and learn about botanicals and such. We went and spent a weekend with him. Fascinating. One thing that we found is to fill that tank, he uses a solar DC pump. He's able to fill that thing in a few hours, 20,000 gallons from a solar pump. And I go, are you freaking kidding me? Well, you can't always count on the sun. He goes, because it's a DC pump, it still pumps just at a slower rate. Where if you're doing an AC, it has to get up to a certain speed and power for the inverter to work to be able to get the power. So I'm going, well, hell, somebody should have told me that, okay. So then we have Bob Anderson. He's the supervisor of fuel refueling out at nuclear power plant. He lives in Tonopah. 12 years ago, he moved out there, and they're going to charge him $30,000 to hook up to the grid. He says, ah, screw you, I'll do it myself. He has a 10-foot kind of bunker thing under a tough shed where he puts his lead nickel iron batteries. He went to nickel iron now. He goes to nickel iron batteries. He has a lot of solar panels, enough that he can run window shakers, you know, air conditioning now. He has backup diesel for when he needs to pump and all this kind of stuff. And he's got totally off-grid, satellite, cell phone, septic, well, solar generator, and a wind turbine, okay? So he's got a pole that he puts it. We got to get you out there. Bob's going to love you a long time. He's just finishing a greenhouse over his aquaponics system. Now, the thing is that he was talking about these permanent magnet windmills before. He had started building it, you know, and then finally just got one off of eBay or something because, you know, it was easier. But he goes, you know, this is very cool. And there's guys up in Denver or something that's doing this. You probably know who I'm talking about. And they found out that it produced so much energy, it melted the whole damn thing. They go, we got to get a wind speed gun. We should have figured that one out. That was a mistake.
See, but that's not the mistake. You see, well, you don't need that governor. What you want to do is, like, the technology that I'm using and the technology that I'm going, first I wanted to wrap their minds around the permanent magnet. Now people are starting to understand permanent magnet can produce more. The thing is you cannot use the standard DC the inverters, the charge controllers, because they're not designed for that. They're designed for maybe 20, 30 amps at maximum 50. That's it. Now, when you get something up to literally 200, 300 volts at a couple hundred amps shooting out of that.
Really big wires.
You'll melt it. No, the charge controller will melt. You can't control at that point in time. Now your battery just overcharges and can melt and explode.
So what do you do with that extra energy?
See, that's why I decided, hey, and just like another gentleman decided, there's about four of us. And once again, we couldn't get patents, so everybody's doing it and everyone's allowed to do it.
I don't
want to
hear any more about your patent.
Not a problem. What it is okay, the point of it is a lot of us understood that, you know what, I can put through just a starter. If you go underneath, you got a starter solenoid. A starter solenoid, I can put about 1,000 amps through. And that 1,000 amps, at that point in time, a solenoid, it works on a mechanical, where it closes off and uncloses. Closes off and then opens. It opens the circuit and closes the circuit. So now I've got two prongs on the top that when the circuit is closed or standard open, it controls both sides. So when I have that over energy that's coming through the batteries after the batteries, instead of wasting that energy, connect it to your hot water heater. Why are you going to run your hot water heater off of that? And you know what? The good thing about a hot water heater is most of the time, if you get an electric, just a regular electric hot water heater, it'll even run off of lower amperage and lower volts.
You know, I got a practical right now. Right, yesterday, I'm looking for a DC pump to do the solar collector to heat my fish. We'll talk about it.
Oh, absolutely.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges.
This is Davi Barker from ShinyBadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at ShinyBadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
If you can't listen to the Liberty Radio Network's internet streams, free satellite channel, or radio affiliates, no worries. You can listen to LRN.FM from any phone, anywhere. Add this number to your phone. 213-493-0309. It's a long-distance call, so make sure you're familiar with your phone's calling plan. The Liberty Radio Network listen lines are locked into our stream 24 hours a day. Call 213-493-0309. That's 213-493-0309.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Okay, we're back. We're sitting here yakking how we're going to save the planet. All right. This is, see, it's not really an over-unity thing as much as it's just a suck all the freaking amps out of everything. I mean, get up next to the mic.
Well, no, that's only one piece of the puzzle.
He's showing me all kinds of graphs and this. I've seen this kind of stuff before. I go, yeah, that's all very interesting. Where's my freaking voltmeter and kind of drain power? And we'll just go check it. So Mike Crosswhite can be here at 11, but that's kind of late. I got some other stuff I got to do. But I tell you, this is what we'll go ahead and do. You have your, you know, lab, I mean, your garage, your whatever you're doing. It's all, you know, the brain box kind of stuff. And so I'm going, but you're in Casa Grande, which is probably about an hour and a half from here, you know, to get down there. I'm willing to make the trip. You know, I'm it's vacation time for me. I'm in the, you know, from now, we just finished up beginning of the week. I'm through all the kind of honeydews I got and, you know, going to the different thing, whatever I want to do in Christmas and Thanksgiving and family and kids and everything. And I can carve me out some time, some afternoon that we go. Do you have a job you got to go to 9 to 5 or what?
No, actually, I live off of the royalties of some of my previous. So it's minimal, but it's slow.
Okay, so you're like, you know, see, you're a patent guy.
Well, no, I look at it as I just want to make enough, you know, to be able to support my family.
No, I'm hip, but I'm just like, all right. So we got to free his mind. All right, so we go down there, and I got some guys that they you know, put little stuff on and tape make and does or doesn't and kind of, you know, whatever, and you're up for that.
Absolutely. We can play around with the voltmeter and the multimeter all day long.
Okay. I got to show you my lab. We'll give you a tour after the show. I'll go give you what Fur or Donna will. I got to do this editing and so on. But I tell you, you know, I love this. But I tell you, the one thing that I'm just like, man, you got to, you know, erase from your cortex all this government permission slip thing, because that is, it's so much diversion of effort. It's just thought process and brain power, and, you know, it's just, it goes, oh, Michael's on the way. Yeah, okay, so he's on the way.
It is financially and mentally draining.
Stop! Seriously! You know what I mean? Just stop! Just stop! You know where they make, I tell you what, you know, it's always on the internet where they do that. Click here and save the planet and, you know, zombie apocalypse be averted by clicking on watch this video. And then they go to the, and finally it's a video series of whatever and they make bank. You do this at something that where you got kind of whatever, you're going to make more money on the DVD than anything else. Plus, it's like, and it's out there and life sucks, you know, you be the man, you can't control it and we're free. Nah. That's what we help with. Because I'm telling you, it is not. It's called disruptive technologies. Next. So this one, it's like Tesla. What they do. You know, Elon Musk comes up and he says, it's all open here. Take it. Patent piece. You take it. Says, that's what's holding you up. You don't have the tech. Here, I give it out. Here's the tech. Knock yourself out. Create an industry. Don't care. Oh, you want me to patent my rocket engines? Why? I'm the only customer.
He goes, and if I patent it, I put out, just give you all the blueprints. Really suck it. I am the hell no. A totally different world is coming, and it's made for guys like you. And all this patent restriction stuff was a freaking net they put over your brain. And I'm going to cut that net. We're going to go kick us some ass. All right. All right. Well, that's my goal. So we'll go ahead and, you know, see if we can get these guys. Now Michael's on his way. He decided he's like, you know, he didn't want to miss the opportunity. Here he comes. So he'll be here probably before the end of the show. And so what we're going to go ahead and do is we're going to give more evaluation of your tech and what you have, and we'll share it with everybody. Because I could see when I talked to you before, I go, save it for the show. I knew there was some passion there. There's a little bit more than meets the eye. So there's a, we're going to launch, all right? And get, but it's just the creativity. And there's so many people out there and the resource that want to build them if you will just let it go. Quit trying to, because let them do all the paperwork. Screw them. You can do provisional, or you got this to kind of protect you from somebody else doing it anyway, right?
Well, yeah, what it is, it's just a provisional, and the problem, I mean, the only thing I'm looking at is I have to do this pretty much based on my income, and it's very slow, and it's very...
Kickstarter!
Exactly. I mean, it's just one of those things that where it's slow for me, mainly because I just need to provide for my family.
I'm hip, and there's people that want to help. This, it's this open source, totally different distributed mindset, you know, help kind of, and you want to have, you know, some resources. You can do it in a lot of different ways. You know, we have fundraising, you know, category on Freedom's Phoenix for just this kind of stuff. And I tell you, everybody's on my case about my batteries. You know, they're just on my, I do grow carbon nanotubes to make nickel iron battery density, you know, higher density out there.
Actually, if you're going to use carbon, then you might want to look for the magnesium. And I can give you a website to go to the and get the magnesium. Magnesium with carbon, and then you just wrap it with cotton, and then you add water to it, and your water is your electrolyte. Much more powerful. And you can run them in series and get some serious amperage. And
okay, we'll play. I'll go show you my lab. Maybe you can just come out and we'll have us some fun over the holidays when it's not so freaking hot out there. See, that's why I don't do it in the summer. It's too freaking hot. You know, but now it's really nice weather. But... Papa, finish the playhouse. Papa, where's I? Oh, my fish I got. Oh, this is what where you come in. I'm looking for a DC pump because depending on how much sun hits a solar panel, it's just a DC pump pumps faster, it pumps slower. It go up to 400 gallons a minute down to like, you know, 1 gallon a minute, whatever. It still works, you know, based on, you know, how much energy it's getting, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going, all right. So but what happens, I don't want the pump going through the hoses. It's out in the sun that's, you know, heating the thing. Because at night when the sun goes down, it keeps pumping. It'll make it cold. So when's it turn off? When the sun goes away. Why do I want that? Because I'm lazy and I don't want to have to be flipping switches all the time. So I'm going, if I make it a DC solar pump, you know, based on when there's more sun, it's going faster. When do I want it to go faster? When there's more sun, it's heating it up. When do I want it to go slower? It's kind of cloudy. It's not as much sun. It's shaded a little bit. I don't want it to. I want the water to heat up more. Sitting, I'm going, well, a DC pump that'll pump at any rate depending on how much sun. That's exactly what I need. I run up to the RV place. I was going to do that this afternoon. One reason why I got to go. I got to go up and get this thing because it's starting to get cold. My fish are tilapia. They say, hey, it's cold. You know, we can't have that. Because last year I found out when they died at 54 degrees.
Exactly.
So we got to keep it up above that. So this is, you know, I'm with you, man. I'm with you, man. I'm with you. We're trying to get, it's all about saving my fish, you know.
So it works.
So this is, so you can see how this, now we have an airlift pump that Michael that's coming now. We use a, we just need a little bit of power. Creates the little bubbles and it lifts it 15 feet up and distributes through my domes because it uses only 15% of the energy to lift that water using air. We're going, see, we got skills, you know? So this is it. So right now, what's the other option to heat my fish? Well, I got the solar 10-foot satellite, you know, dish out there that we're putting Mylar on to heat a manifold to do that. Then we got a compost pile. I mean, we just do this just because we can. And this is the kind of tech that we're looking to help. But what do you see this as, what you're accomplishing is you're making maximum use instead of throwing away energy, instead of it going in the heat, instead of it just turning it off, you've created circuitry that allows with solenoids and so on to maximize the use and however much I can produce, I can put in more batteries. Mr. Bob Anderson wants to see you, okay? So we already got a, hell, we got a market for you. It's, you know, patent, you buy it anyway. See my point?
Yep.
Rear.
Yeah, no, I mean, the whole point was, even by using a solenoid, there's about 10 people doing the solenoid, because we all figured out at about the same time that a solenoid has an open and a closed circuit. Well, when it's the only problem with solar or even wind is once you've stored your battery bank, that's it. So then I decided, well, you know what? I'm not going to just dump it away. Why not charge a secondary bank? And that's when the solenoid came in, because I had to have a switch that controlled where and when.
And you do your water heater.
Exactly.
And then you do your whatever the heck.
And then I can do whatever else I want to do.
You know, you run your chitty chitty bang bang egg cutters cooker thing. You know what I
mean? Absolutely.
So this is, I understand. I'm glad we got to meet. I'm glad you came by and you made the trip, because you hit a little treasure trove here of a whole bunch of that people that want to help. And a lot of the things is that you have the tech. You have the idea, you have the concept. You might need a little bit of resources. A lot of times you just need help, you know. And and we have like Saturday morning workshops here. The barn is nice. Have you got a tour yet of anything?
Not yet.
Oh, we're going to have some fun. I'm going to show you a go. All right. Well, I'm glad we got to share this with you guys, because we'll get you more on this, because, you know, what do you think is going to happen? Just fun, sharing, newspaper, magazine, site, radio show, fundraising center, help, contacts. You see? Oh. And do they take Bitcoin? They will. It's a distributed freedom and the states are relevant. Next. All right. We're going to help David Wright. David Wright, you know, the Bug Out Buggy is just the platform. That was not the point. It's the tech behind it. We're going to find out more, you know, and we're going to go. I want to get an evaluation and have us go ahead and check and make sure it does what it does. And then we're going to share it with you. David Wright, keep paying attention on this. We'll get you some more information in the archive.